£1,000 in stamp duty on the purchase of her apartment in Hove. Remember when her, one of her colleagues, the housing minister Matthew Pennycook, told me...
I don't think there is a story here in any sense,
Good Lord.
Other than the fact that Angela Rayner clearly lives rent-free in the heads of the Shadow Cabinet.
Utterly hopeless. In other news, a right royal reconciliation?
I would love reconciliation with my family. You know, there's no point in continuing to fight anymore. As I said, life is precious. I don't know how much longer my father has.
And now it would appear Prince Harry will be meeting with the King. In other news, the failure of the electric car eligibility and the damage it has done to dealers and a drive for chickenpox vaccinations. We'll speak with the relevant minister. All starts after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the vaccine for chickenpox is to be rolled out on the NHS in England from January. The jab, which is currently only available privately, will be given to babies alongside the existing MMR vaccine. Figures released yesterday show uptake of that jab is at a 15-year low. Consultant virologist Dr. Chris Smith says that is a concern.
It's not just that on average there's a low level of vaccine uptake across the country. There are hot spots, and that means that lots of people who share a number of different characteristics tend to be clustered together and susceptible. And once one person gets it, many people in that group get it, and you get a big outbreak.
A government contractor has been told to remove a series of job adverts for roles at an immigration removal centre. Mighty had been seeking candidates for roles including a hospitality and floristry tutor, who'd also be responsible for teaching balloon craft and cake decorating. The firm says the activities help manage the stresses of detention at the site near Heathrow. Judges are to rule on whether to overturn a ban on asylum seekers being accommodated at a hotel in Essex. The Home Office and the owner of the Bell Hotel in Epping are seeking to challenge a High Court injunction. A decision will be announced this afternoon. An MSP has been charged over allegations a secret camera was placed in toilets in the Scottish Parliament. Colin Smith was suspended by Labour after he was charged with possessing indecent images last week. LBC's Scotland political editor Gina Davidson has more details.
He has also had his parliamentary pass, his access to the parliament, revoked. A Scottish Parliament spokesperson has put out a statement saying that given the ongoing criminal investigation, the parliament's corporate body took the decision to deactivate Colin Smith's parliamentary pass.
At least 23 people are now known to have been killed in yesterday's Russian attack on Kyiv. Rescue work is continuing in the Ukrainian capital after yesterday's drone and missile bombardment. An EU office and the British Council building were also hit. British number three, Jacob Fernley, has been knocked out of the US Open by Alexander Zverev. It leaves Cameron Norrie as the only Brit remaining in the men's draw. Emma Raducanu, who won the title in New York 4 years ago, will take on Elena Rybakina later. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 92.16. It closed down 38 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers, some quite heavy with the odd rumble of thunder, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after seven on Friday, the 29th of August. I'd like to say it's a shocker, but actually it's not. Hotel migrants' rights outweigh those of locals, a government department has told the highest court in the land. We'll give you full details on that story in just a few moments' time. In other news, the shelling by Russia, the ambassador called to the Foreign Office of the British Council in Ukraine. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said President Trump's not happy with the latest Russian attacks.
was not happy about this news, but he was also not surprised. These are two countries that have been at war for a very long time. The president is continuing to watch this intently.
In other news, all babies to be offered chickenpox vaccinations. We will speak with the relevant government minister. Speaking of ministers, what of the housing minister and even higher up the food chain, the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner? Do you remember how we were told by one of her colleagues that there was no story to see here about her three homes or three pads Rayner? We now learn that she's dodged £40,000 in stamp duty by swiftly, not illegally, I hasten to add, but swiftly and rather cleverly moving various locations as her prime residence. How long will this hypocrisy be allowed to go on? Staying with yet another of the Labour losers, it has to be Asda.
Thousands of prices rolled back across the store and online. That's Asda price.
That tells the Chancellor she's hopeless. Stop taxing everything, says the Chairman. We'll have more details on that. Hopefully a royal reconciliation is on the cards. Prince Harry to catch up with his dad, the King. We'll give you the details of when that is expected to happen. And we remember events 20 years on.
I'm speaking to you from the city of New Orleans. Nearly empty, still partly underwater, and waiting for life and hope to return.
Then U.S. President George W. Bush addressing the nation following Hurricane Katrina, which took nearly 1,400 lives and left much of a city homeless.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
An extraordinary story. Pardon my language. I'll give you a warning. How dare they? How bloody dare they? A government department putting forward the idea that the need to meet the human rights of asylum seekers by housing them in hotels outweighs the safety concerns of local families. I will say it again, how bloody dare they? Who is paying the council tax that pays for the local authority that is quite rightly trying to look after the interests and possible safety, bear in mind there's a case going before the courts, possible safety of some of its citizens? I look forward to speaking with the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, who might not personally have authorised that, but it's come from her department. An injunction blocking asylum seekers from staying at a hotel in Epping in Essex set a precedent that would encourage similar action by other councils. Extraordinary. My colleague, LBC reporter Shivani Sharma, was at the Court of Appeal yesterday and joins me now. Shivani, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Competing interests aren't all equal interests, according to the Home Office, with its lawyers stating that the government's statutory duty to house asylum seekers and uphold their human rights to be free from destitution under Article 3 of the ECHR is more important than concerns raised by Epping Forest District Council and its local residents, who called for the Bell Hotel housing 138 male asylum seekers to be closed. Now, the Home Office has argued that it should have been involved in the previous hearing at the High Court last week and that it was excluded on the basis that this was a planning issue between the local council and the hotel owners, when in reality, they say the government is needing to fulfil its obligations to asylum seekers, which it said yesterday is in the national interest. Now, lawyers acknowledged yesterday that the government has to use these hotels because of the high numbers of small boat crossings. And we know that that number hit 50,000 under this Labour government. And the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, was unable to tell you last month that those numbers will come down.
Home Secretary, can you tell me the numbers will decline this time next year?
Well, that's exactly what we need to do. We need to get those boat numbers coming down. We need to, and no one should be making those boat crossings. So that is
what we need to do, Home Secretary, yes, but will we do? Will the numbers be declining this time next year?
It is, of course, what we are aiming to do.
Now, Nick, the lawyers for the Home Office also expressed their concern yesterday that the local council will set a precedent for other councils across the country to take legal action in other areas and that they may also end up protesting too. Basildon Council is just one example of a local authority now lobbying the government over its use of HMOs, houses in multiple occupation, as well as asylum hotels. The government lawyers also said yesterday that a very small number of serious offences committed by asylum seekers shouldn't result in the entire closure of a hotel. A reference there, of course, to the alleged sexual assault, which was the catalyst for protests that we saw in July. Now, the Home Office has argued that injunctions aren't the right response or the right tool to tackle these protests. But as you can imagine, the local council has fought back against this. It says that local concerns shouldn't be ignored, that the housing of asylum seekers has become intolerable since those protests in July, and the judges are expected to give their verdict at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Shivani Sharma reporting. Let's go straight to the heart of the story. 9 minutes after seven, Chris Whitbread is leader of Epping Forest District Council and joins me now. Councillor, good to have you on. Thank you for your time, sir. How do you react to what we're hearing from yesterday? Morning.
Thanks, Nick. My first thoughts yesterday were how annoyed I was at the government saying asylum seekers trump my residence in Epping Forest. And schools go back next week, and I've got worried parents because of what happened previously. And I just don't think the government is taking us to court again, taking us back to court again on what was a good judgment by the last week for the people of Epping. They've taken us back to court, and they should be spending their time finding a plan to deal with the asylum problem.
Councillor, I know it's not your worry, but if you don't want them in the Bell Hotel and other hotels up and down the land, where are these folk to go?
Well, that is the government's responsibility, and I accept that places have to pay their part. Within 3 miles of the Bell Hotel, we have another hotel being used as well. We're concentrating on the Bell at the present time because it's right in the heart of a community, close to 5 schools, residential properties, and it's causing chaos.
While I haven't been there lately, I do know Epping. If I were to go to your town councillor and to ask the reaction to what we heard in the courts yesterday, what we heard from a government department saying that the migrants' rights outweigh those of your council taxpayers, what do you imagine I'd hear?
You'd hear exactly what you've just heard from me. If they care about Epping and its people, then you have to want the Bell Hotel closed. It's just in the wrong location. I know working with my daughter and my colleague, Holly Whitbread, we both stand in exactly the same position on this. We believe that the hotel should never have been used in the first place. We were very clear with the previous government. Eventually, they shut it. We're just as clear with this government, although they just don't want to listen. I have to tell you, Nick, my only conversation with Home Office officials ended with them saying I was being too political by arguing this.
You're a Conservative councillor, are you, councillor?
Absolutely.
So they're suggesting this isn't, as I would make the point, you're probably doing this for the interests of your council taxpayers. They're saying you're doing it because you're a Conservative, roughly. Is that what you think?
I think that's part of it, but I think it's more... The government have politicised this now by saying asylum seekers trump residents, and just not acceptable. You know, I grew up in Epping. Epping's my hometown. Mm-hmm. And it's horrible to see what's been going on over recent weeks. Absolutely horrible. You know, it's changed the whole atmosphere of the town at the present time. We will get it back to what it was, but this really has broken community cohesion, and it's the government's fault.
Last couple of questions. If the Court of Appeal finds against you, Councillor, what happens then?
We'll be meeting this afternoon to think of the next ways forward.
Okay.
But we won't give up the fight. We won't give up the fight.
Lastly, and I stress to my listeners, you're the leader of Epping Forest District Council, but what do you make of the story this morning that Essex County Council, again, not your council, is offering support to staff who feel, and I quote, unsettled by St George's flags erected in Epping and other parts of the county? The county council tells workers in an email it could evoke feelings of discomfort and may be associated with anti-immigration rhetoric. Councillor?
Nick, I'll be talking to county councillors later on. I'm a county councillor myself. It's the first I've heard of it this morning. And I think I will be looking at that myself later on.
All right. Do you feel unsettled when you see the flag of St George?
When I see our flag, I feel proud.
Thank you for your time. Good luck at the court. Let's hope justice prevails. Chris Whitbread is leader of Epping Forest District Council. I stress, not Essex County Council. We'll come to that possibly in more detail. 13 after 7. Listening, Jacqueline McKenzie, who's head of immigration and asylum law, Lee Day Solicitors, regularly helps us with matters such as these. What do you think? What justice should prevail in your view? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Justice, what, in terms of the outcome?
The Epping district, the Epping hotel decision.
Well, it was interesting because you started off by saying that the government's argument is that asylum seekers have more rights than other people. And I don't know the full context of that. that rights are universal. No one group has more rights than the other. And I think that's the starting point. But if we look at Epping specifically, where if there are conflicts, what we have to analyse is what exactly does that mean? Whose rights in Epping are being trampled? Now, there's been a lot of discussion about safety, and the councillor just now, the leader of Epping Forest District Council, spoke about safety. We understand that what's caused the concern has been the arrest of one man who's rightfully going through the due process of the criminal justice system. But I also find in the Ministry of Justice data that there were 30 to 46 sexual offences in Epping and 308 violent offences in Epping. So Epping obviously has an issue with violence, but yet they've picked up on this one case as a reason for displacing asylum seekers. I haven't quite understood that.
But the heart of it is Edward Brown, who is a KC acting for the Home Office, told the court, and I quote, "The relevant public interests in play are not equal. Thus, migrants' rights outweigh those of the local taxpayers." You can't support that position, can you?
Well, as I said, rights are universal, but sometimes they conflict. And when they conflict, we have to pick it apart. What does it actually mean? And so whose rights in Epping are being affected by the asylum seekers being explained?
Well, the mothers, fathers, grandparents, uncles and aunts who fear that their children could be at risk.
But is that a real fear? Because they've got...
Well, I asked them. I sense it is, with respect, Ms. McKenzie.
Yes, but the data shows that there have been 308 violent and sexual offences in that borough, and they've picked upon the case of one man. So is this really a genuine fear? Is it political? I understand a lot of the people protesting outside the Epping Hotel are coming in from outside the area.
Well, the people of Epping can't help that, of course.
No, of course not. But that's right. But what do the people of Epping really think about this? I think that's the thing. And then, of course, the government's got a real problem here, because if the case goes in favour of Epping Council today, what are they going to do with the, 138 people, I believe, were ordered out by Justice Eyre by the 12th? And what do they do with the other 30-odd thousand people who are in hotels?
Well, that's the government's issue, isn't it, Jacqueline?
Well, it's the government's issue, but it's all of our issue, because, you know, they've got to be put somewhere. The law requires that, not just Article 3, but our own domestic laws require that asylum seekers are housed somewhere.
Grateful for your time today. Thank you. Jacqueline McKenzie, Head of Immigration and Asylum Law at the firm Lee Day. We'll take your views on that. Also, coming up after the news...
There have been so many disagreements, differences between me and some of my family.
But hopefully a reconciliation on between father and son, Prince Harry and the King. 7:16 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Children are to be offered a free chickenpox vaccine by the NHS from January. Judges are due to rule on whether to overturn a ban on asylum seekers being accommodated at a hotel in Epping. And a suspended Labour MSP has been charged over claims a secret camera was placed in toilets inside the Scottish Parliament. LBC weather. Sunny spells and blustery showers. A high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 remains closed westbound between junctions 9 at Ashford and 8 at Leeds Castle. It's all down to an accident, and there are delays on the approach and on the surrounding routes, especially the A20. And then also the M2's very busy westbound at junction 5 at Sittingbourne. And that was after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are back open. And all the lanes are back open as well on the A2 westbound. It's very busy up to the tollgate services after that accident, but at least everything's back open now. On the train, severe disruption continues to and from Liverpool Street for all train services. It's because of a track problem. No Weaver line between Liverpool Street and Hackney Downs, and Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services severely disrupted.
The all-new LBC app. News your way. Download it for free from the App Store. This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 606097 3 LBC.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
Just because you can't see something doesn't mean it isn't there. You can't hold this in your hand or pack it in your bags. You can't touch it. But our network is around you, like oxygen, near or far. We're there. That's why we've been awarded Best Mobile Network Coverage by Uswitch. O2, essential for living.
Based on Open Signal Awards, UK Mobile Network Experience Report, September 2024, to verify see opensignal.com/UK Mobile Report.
Now it's even easier to sell for free on eBay. I was thinking, maybe I should sell that juicer we've used a grand total of once. Or the shirt I've been saying I'll wear for the last 2 years, but never have. Or that tiger cushion the dog barks at every time he's in the lounge. Oh, is that it again? No, Bertie!
With new AI listing features and simple delivery, it's now even easier to sell for free on eBay. Download the app now. eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after seven. How extraordinary. And I absolutely understand, and she's a very learned woman, the solicitor's argument, why aren't we looking at the hundreds of other... But so that makes it all right, does it? The alleged sexual offence in Epping, we'll just look away because there are others, so why should we get excited about this one? It would seem an extraordinary argument with respect. Front page of the newspapers, it is on some of those front pages. Indeed, the Times has it on the front page. The Daily Telegraph has a cracking story on its front page. Rayner dodges £40,000 stamp duty. Do you remember when that rather hapless housing minister, Matthew Pennycook, told us earlier this week, there's nothing to see here, this isn't a story, because I've only been a journalist for about 120 years, so what do I know? There we are. It's now, she's not done anything illegal, but she's cut the tax bill by rather swiftly moving around. I mean, this woman has more homes than Foxton's, and she's declared it as her main residence, a new one in Hove. Extraordinary. The government really is unravelling. And I've been around a few years, I've never seen a government unravel at this speed, ever. The front page of the Daily Mail. Now the boss of Asda tells Rachel Reeves, stop taxing everything. There we go. The front page of the Daily Express. The French police say, we're not going into the sea to slash the boats. Do you remember this one-in, one-out deal where they cut the... Oh, dear God, if I didn't have children and grandchildren, it'd be fine. You could laugh about it, but sadly, when I toddle off, they've got to stay in this country. And in a related story, cracking story on the front page of The Sun as well, this is how the government is spending your money. They're giving lessons in party skills and blowing balloons and hairdressing and an asylum seeker centre at Heathrow Airport. Balloonacy is the front page of The Sun. This is a constant theme. It's a good story, that one, and we'll look at it later in the show. Front page of the LBC app. They have the aftermath of that horrific events in Minneapolis. I suppose, actually, despite all the problems here, that we have a government all at sea, that we have a rather smart deputy prime minister who moves properties around, we have a Home Secretary who's decided that migrants' rights outweigh those of the people who pay her wages, at least we don't send our children to schools in the United States. We should probably take comfort there, because the LBC app has pictures of the 8-year-old boy and the 10-year-old girl who lost their lives in those hideous, hideous shootings. And to the Huff Post, which tells us as Labour's poll decline continues, Sir Keir Starmer now is the most unpopular Prime Minister, by the way, in the last 20 years. So much as many of you loathe Boris Johnson, possibly rightly or wrongly, loathe Liz Truss, equally rightly or wrongly, even loathe Gordon Brown, rightly or wrongly, he's now the most unpopular in decades. It's only taken him 13 months. Extraordinary. Starmer plans number 10 shake-up. Don't shake up, mate. Just get out. Honestly, no shake-up. Get out. All right, let's get some of your voices on the radio at 7.23. George in Luton. George, you're on the radio. What can you tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
I got particularly concerned this morning on this topic.
Yeah.
I'm retired now, but I've spent an awful lot of my time working in the bush in some of these countries that they're so, say, fleeing from.
Working in the bush, did you say?
Yeah. I've been working abroad, but not in five-star hotels and stuff like that. I have actually worked in the bush.
Right.
I've seen this firsthand.
What is it you did, sir? What was your job, might I ask?
It was related to construction.
Right. Okay.
And this idea that these people coming over in rubber dinghies are fleeing persecution and et cetera is completely unfounded.
Well, the some will, but most won't. Well,
the vast majority will not.
That's right.
My point is, if I am accused of doing something illegal, as in getting in a rubber boat and going across the channel, I would be expected to provide some alibi as to why I'm not guilty.
Right. Well, yes, right.
Now, in their case, I would say if their alibi is fleeing war, etc., then they would be obliged to provide proof.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no evidence of proof, then the crime, if you like, has been committed.
So let me ask you this, George. What do you make of paying your taxes to a government that says the migrants' rights outweigh those of people living in a specific part of Essex?
My understanding is that indigenous people of the UK, as in many other countries, have earned the rights that they now enjoy.
Mm.
Other people who come here illegally should not be entitled to those rights automatically. Rights are earned.
George, thank you. Khalid in Edmonton, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think we need to get to the heart of the problem. The heart of the problem is this Labour government can't process asylum claims quickly enough, can they?
True. As the Conservatives failed as well, we need to say
as well,
that.
That's the nub of the problem. The reason migrants are in hotels is because we can't deal with them quickly enough to process their claims. And that, to be fair, isn't fair on them because they're having to be stuck up somewhere, waiting for claims to happen. That ultimately is the problem. I'm surprised, the Labour government in Vancouver isn't being called out for this because they've been in power 13 months.
Yep.
And they've done nothing. The numbers are going up. Now, don't get me wrong, Nick. Clearly there has to be rights on both sides. We have the housed asylum seekers, but clearly the local population has rights as well. And for the government to say, one trumps the other, what is Starmer going on about? He's completely ridiculous, isn't he?
I absolutely agree. It was a particularly lamentable day yesterday on so many levels, not least, forget Angela Rayner being exposed for dodging stamp duty. Khalid, thank you. Have yourself a safe weekend, 7:26. We shall return to this, but we go to other matters. Today marks 20 years since Hurricane Katrina caused mass destruction across parts of the southern United States. Many people lost their lives, thousands of homes were destroyed, millions of people were left homeless back in 2005. And LBC's reporter Helen Hodnett takes us back to those dark times.
I'm speaking to you from the city of New Orleans. Nearly empty, still partly underwater, and waiting for life and hope to return.
On the 29th of August, 2005... Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast of America.
With all the power out in this area and some structural damage, the name of the game now is to wait.
The events that followed resulted in nearly 2,000 deaths and 300,000 homes destroyed.
You know what? These walls are going to start coming in.
The day before it arrived, New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin ordered people to leave the city. But 20% of the population stayed put.
I am this morning declaring that we will be doing a mandatory evacuation.
When it hit, the storm had weakened slightly and the initial damage seemed manageable. But then the levees, which were supposed to protect the city from flooding, broke, leaving 80% of it underwater.
My first instinct when we saw the levee break was, this is bigger than 9/11.
Most of the city was left without power, food, or shelter, with thousands of people stranded, begging for rescue.
It's all flooded. Everything's flooded all the way up to our waist.
How did you get out?
Swam.
We swam out and we used that for my grandmother on a raft.
And the extent of the human toll started to become clear.
Who was at your house with you?
My wife.
Where
Where is she now?
Can't find her body. She gone.
Up to 20,000 residents took shelter at the city's Superdome, a huge football stadium in downtown New Orleans, where overcrowding and a lack of power or sanitation inside created squalid conditions.
The smell was vomiting. The hallways, we actually started camping outside so that we could breathe. There were rumors of rapes, murders, and there was a shootout today as well.
The U.S. government response to Hurricane Katrina is widely seen as an abject failure that saw poorer, mainly black residents abandoned to fend for themselves.
George W. Bush, get out the White House and come help us. There's no supplies. We haven't had ice or water in 3 days.
New Orleans is what, almost 70% black. And I think that if it was 70% white, that it would be responded to more quickly.
And with no power, sewage, clean water, or transportation, social order started to break down across the city.
People are taking things into their own hands. There are a lot of people walking around down here with guns.
In the following weeks, martial law was declared in some areas, with thousands of National Guard troops drafted in.
It's unlike anything I've seen in my 24 years of military career.
The cleanup began, but toxic floodwaters, debris, and decaying buildings made it dangerous and slow.
I mean, there is urine, human feces, and then you've got a baby carriage in the middle of all of this filth.
The failures surrounding the disaster resulted in President Bush's approval ratings taking a hit, and many of the tens of thousands who evacuated never returned home.
Realizing that you can't go back, nothing that you had is there.
LBC's Helen Hoddernott reporting, coming up later in the show. From being a lawmaker to a law bender, the Deputy Prime Minister, how did she manage to dodge £40,000 worth of stamp duty plus...
thousands of prices rolled back across the store and online. That's Asda price.
It has to be Asda, as the boss tells the Chancellor, stop taxing everything. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC News Time. Thomas Watts.
Children in England and Wales will be offered a chickenpox vaccine on the NHS from January. It's hoped the rollout will prevent rare complications and cut the time parents have to take off work. Judges are to rule on whether to overturn a ban on asylum seekers being housed at a hotel in Epping. The Home Office and the owner of the Bell Hotel are seeking to challenge a High Court injunction. A member of the Scottish Parliament has been charged over claims a secret camera was placed in toilets at Holyrood. Colin Smith was suspended by Labour after being charged with possessing indecent images of children earlier this month. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers, some heavy with the odd rumble of thunder, a high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Hearing this means you're one step closer to winning a huge £20,000. That's a step closer to dream holidays, home refurbs, or a brand new car. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Winplus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £34 million. That's enough to get your hands in the air. Wow, you really don't care. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7.33, we'll come back to our conversation about a government department that suggests migrants' rights outweigh those of the council taxpayers of Essex. And the county council out there saying that they will provide help for anyone who feels distressed when they see the cross of St. George. Lord knows how we've descended into this. Let's get into the world of business and a warning for the Chancellor, the front page of the Daily Mail. Here with more details, Kathleen Brooks, financial analyst, research director at the trading platform XTB. Who's got words of warning then for the Chancellor, Kathleen? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It would be Alan Layton. So he's the chairman of Asda. He's a retail heavyweight. He's worked for the Co-op in the past and he's run Royal Mail as well. But he has absolutely berated Rachel Reeves today and say that her tax grabs, the government is making the cost of living crisis worse and it's battering business and the middle classes. So he's the latest in a long line of supermarket bosses and business bodies who've called out Rachel Reeves for just bad economic policy. And I think what's really important about Layton's message is that he's clearly said the government doesn't deliver growth, business does, which is essentially cut government spending, lower taxes, that will be how you get yourself out of this mess. That's what he's saying. But the interesting thing is he is also a big Labour supporter and has been in the past. So when one of your own is criticising you, Rachel, if you're listening, you probably need to pay attention to it.
Let me ask you, Kathleen, you're with businessmen and businesswomen every day of your working life. Is this a growing sense, the things that the chairman of Asda is saying, would that be shared by many others, do you imagine?
100%, yeah. I think pretty much across the board, there is a feeling of gloom that I haven't noticed, I haven't really felt like since 2008. But the fact that it's domestically generated, I think, is worse. In the past, a lot of the big crises we faced have been international. But this feels like something that's very, there doesn't seem to be a way out. Not certainly on the path that we're on at the moment. So it definitely feels very different to 2008, that's for sure.
All right, let's move on now. You weren't even born when Roger Moore as James Bond and Barbara Bach were driving around in a Lotus car, but unfortunately they seem to have rather stalled now.
Yeah, there's more bad news, sadly. So Lotus is based up in South Norfolk, and they've announced that they're going to cut half of their workforce. And they've said it's due to Trump's tariffs, but it's also due to slowing demand because about 20% of their sales go to the US. So, of course, that's going to take a knock from the tariffs. But their biggest market is actually in the UK, their biggest market in Europe. And that accounts for the dominant sales. So you know, around about 50% of their sales. So as you've got kind of millionaires and billionaires leaving, the people who would buy a Lotus sports car, of course that's going to hit demand. And demand absolutely slumped in the first quarter of this year, although it was actually quite strong in 2024. So they're seeing a massive slowdown. They're owned by a Chinese company called Geely. The government has said back in June that they would support Lotus and protect UK jobs, but obviously that's fallen flat on its face as well. So the company's basically saying demand is the reason why it's had to restructure its business.
And let's finish by crossing the Atlantic off to the United States. What's the rumpus between Donald Trump and a Fed governor?
Yeah, so Lisa Cook is a Fed governor who Donald Trump is trying to fire. He said he'd fire her on Monday for alleged mortgage fraud, but she's having none of this and she's filed a lawsuit challenging what she says is the illegal attempt to remove her by the president. Her lawyer said that even if she did commit the fraud, she still shouldn't be removed and it's still illegal to remove her. Now, she is denying that she did commit that fraud, but the battle will actually play out in court. So it's just yet another battle that President Trump has done. Now, he's really been fighting with the Fed for months, actually. He's threatened to fire and to sue the chairman. He is pressuring them intensely every month to lower interest rates, berating them on social media. And, you know, he's a real estate guy, right? So which real estate guy doesn't want lower interest rates? But it is having a big impact on the financial markets. And the US dollar is actually the weakest currency in the G10 so far this year. The Fed is meant to be independent, so they may actually push against Donald Trump almost as a symbolic act. So we may not get the interest rate cuts that he wants.
Kathleen, enjoy your weekend. Thank you. Kathleen Brooks, financial analyst, research director at the trading platform XTB. Susan, coming to your call as regards the Epping Hotel row. Let's just feature some of your texts. Have we resolved this email issue? I've just remembered. Have we? Is there more work to do? Oh, right, we need to... Okay, Ricky says, I actually like Starmer, but by George, he's surrounded himself with a bunch of idiots. The rest of his party is going to cost him and themselves any chance of winning anything for the next 20 years. I'm not sure about the latter part of that. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that everybody said Boris Johnson would be in power forever. Sam was listening to our report on the 20 years from Hurricane Katrina. George W. Bush saying, our government's first duty is to protect the American people. It's a disgrace this British government appears to have such contempt and disdain for British people. Dan in Newcastle says, if the judge goes against the council, then what's the point of having planning laws? It means the government has the right to build or rezone whatever they want and just say for the greater good. Meanwhile, Tony says, there are lots of problems surrounding immigration, but the 24-carat racism of the people of Epping should not be allowed to prevail. Can't hold with that, Tony. I don't think it's racist to have concerns about the safety of your children, or indeed others, as there is a case going on which the defendant denies. Hope we all heard that, 7:39. Susan's in Tolworth on this. Susan, you're on the radio. Your view, good morning.
Hello, Nick, and congratulations on your wedding.
Thank you. I know she's very lucky... I look very what?
Look very good on the telly. So happy. It is lovely.
Well, I'm a very lucky man. Thank you very much indeed. Susan, what do you hope the court decides later today?
Well, I'm sorry to say I don't agree with this government.
No.
And the reason is I don't agree with our solicitors. They set up the thing about immigration. They're the ones that are being paid lots of money for all this.
Yeah.
And they set it up. Germany sends people back to Afghanistan. And don't get me wrong, I feel sorry for women and children, families. But all these young men coming in is just utterly ridiculous. And I don't think, and one of the people on your programme previously said, we've got loads of doctors and nurses who can't get a job. So tell me why they keep saying we've got to have all these people coming in. It's been going on for years, this, undermining our democracy.
I think you're right, and I don't think there's any greater way to undermine democracy than a government department to say that the migrants, the rights of migrants outweigh those of the local people. Susan, thank you for your views, and thank you for your kind words about my wife. It just sounds so strange. I haven't been saying that for 20 years, but here we go again. So let's go to other stories at 7:40, and Russia facing fury after firing two missiles into the British Council's headquarters in Kyiv. This is an escalation, a dramatic escalation, of the attempted invasion of Ukraine. It was the second biggest attack of the three-year conflict. Hundreds of drones and missiles were launched and killed 21 people, including four children. Speaking to journalists yesterday, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said President Trump was angry.
He was not happy about this news, but he was also not surprised. These are two countries that have been at war for a very long time. Russia launched this attack on Kyiv, and likewise, Ukraine recently dealt a blow to Russia's oil refineries. So the president is continuing to watch this intently.
Let's turn to Sir Grant Shapps, who, of course, former defense secretary, very recently was defense secretary, joins me now. Sir Grant, we learned that the Russian ambassador was called to the Foreign Office. You will be in tune with what happens when an ambassador is called to the Foreign. What actually happens next? Morning, Sir Grant.
Morning. Well, and congratulations to you as
thanks,
well.
Thanks, Grant. I know. She's a lucky woman.
And of course she is. Of course she is. What happens? Well, I've been in the Foreign Office as well. And what happens is the diplomat is called in. It's a no coffee meeting. And stern words are said. And actually, because it's a sort of pre-planned, it's an ambush, but it's pre-planned, actually the person delivering it can make quite a bit of difference. I do remember when Boris Johnson was Foreign Secretary and he called in the Russian ambassador and it was over the poisonings in Salisbury, and everyone thought he would do a sort of classic Boris and slightly fudge it and, you know, well, it's nice to see you here, but look, I'm sorry, I've got this bad news to deliver, we're really unhappy. But he gave him a proper dressing down, actually, apparently left the ambassador pretty pretty shocked. Now, does it matter? Yes, in diplomatic terms, it does. And when it really matters is when it's coordinated and a number of countries do it together. And my goodness, you know, that attack on Wednesday night, along with all of the other attacks on a completely, you know, completely blameless country who simply want their own sovereignty and the ability to rule themselves, was absolutely outrageous. And I'm afraid it's just continuing and will continue, I think.
Come on, Sir Grant, you know the players on the chessboard better than most. What happens now with Donald Trump in this?
Well, I'm afraid he's been a fool on this. And I'll say it as it is, in a way that people who are in office perhaps don't think they can. We have a situation where the leader of the free world cannot apparently distinguish between the person who's done the invading, the aggressor, the dictator in Putin, and the innocent party. You just heard it there in that clip from the White House, where they sort of said, well, you know, yes, Kyiv's been hit, you know, Ukraine's been hit, and on the other side, the Ukrainians have been hitting Russia. Well, there is no equivalence between the two. And we should all be very concerned that we have a White House and a president right now who think that these things are two roughly equivalent things. It would be like, you know, Europe being invaded in the Second World War by the Nazis and just saying, well, you know, of course, we're hitting them back and it's the two things are about equal. They're not equal. There isn't a moral equivalence between the two of these things. And it worries me deeply that the leader of the free world supposedly can't tell the difference.
Before I let you go, can I get a word of you from you on the front page of the Daily Telegraph? You might not yet have had sight of it, Sir Grant, but this is concerning Angela Rayner's properties. And we now learn that she dodged £40,000 in stamp duty by moving her prime residence. There is nothing illegal, I stress. But, Sir Grant, it is the morality of this?
I don't care if people have second homes. I don't have one myself, but I've got one not to. I don't care if people have second homes. What I can't stand is the sheer hypocrisy of this Labour sort of government, and particularly a more socialist member of that government, which you have in the Deputy Prime Minister, going out and saying, you can't do this, but not only will I do it, whether it's taking advantage of right to buy or purchasing more properties or seemingly using tactics that avoid tax, but you can't do it. And I think it's the hypocrisy that people can't stand. And I'm afraid, same with every Labour government, they do this, they leave unemployment higher, and they leave more people on the dole, as we're seeing, and taxes higher and the rest of it, and it's all playing out as is standard, I'm afraid, with a Labour government, and it ain't good.
Best wishes to your family. Sir Grant Shapps, thank you, former Defence Secretary, joining us here on LBC. Coming up after the news, the government announces free chickenpox vaccinations for children in England. Figures released yesterday show that one in five children will start primary school next week without current vaccinations. Consultant virologist Dr. Chris Smith says...
While you might say, well, 80% of people are getting vaccinated, isn't that a good number? It's a target to get to 95% with good reason, because that's the threshold at which diseases can't spread.
More from the government on that after this. Just turned 7:46, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Free chickenpox jabs are to be rolled out on the NHS in England and Wales from next year. Judges are to rule on whether to overturn the ban on asylum seekers being housed at a hotel in Epping. And an MSP has been charged over allegations a secret camera was placed in toilets at the Scottish Parliament. LBC weather. Sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M20. The motorway stays closed westbound from Junction 9 at Ashford to 8 at Leeds Castle. And that's all down to an accident. The emergency repair works are now taking place. Also, the M2's very slow westbound from Junction 6 at Faversham to 5 at Sittingbourne. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. On the S6 stretch of the M25, very busy anti-clockwise to Junction 27 at the M11. It's all down to an accident. And the M40 is very slow, northbound to Junction 5 at Stoke-on-Church, and that's all down to an accident where one lane is closed. And all train services to and from Liverpool Street remain severely disrupted.
This is LBC.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Searching for a holiday? Here's an idea. Don't type cheap flights to wherever into your browser. You know you do it. Search Kayak instead. Let us do the finding for you. All the great flight deals from hundreds of travel sites, all in one place. Go on, do it. Do it. Listen to the waves. They're calling your name. Not literally, obviously, unless your name is... Kayak. Kayak! You're thinking about it, aren't you?
Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry, and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you? Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability, T's and C's, the Lantis Financial Services.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before eight, let's pick up a story on a story that's front page news from the Times to the Metro. All babies to be offered chickenpox vaccinations. And here with more details is Labour MP and Care Minister Stephen Kinnock. Good to see you, Bess. I hope everyone is well with your family. Mr. Kinnock, thank you for coming on. What is it that you are announcing today? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hello. Yes, we're really pleased to be announcing today that from the 1st of January 2026, chickenpox vaccine will be rolled into the measles, mumps and rubella vaccine to become the MMRV. It will all be available on the NHS. That's the big change. It will be a jab at 12 months and 18 months. It's going to be really beneficial from a health point of view because it's great to be able to prevent chickenpox, which, as we know, if you contract it later in life in particular, can be quite dangerous. It's great for parents who won't have to scramble when their kids get chickenpox and you have to be out of school for 5 days at least. That will also be better for the workplace and for the economy, more broadly speaking. So we're really pleased to be making this announcement today. We also think that in the long run, it's going to save the NHS millions of pounds. Prevention is always better than cure, and this is a great example of that.
Did you have it as a kid? I did, and I can remember how damn painful it was, and I have two words to say, calamine lotion. Did you have it, Minister?
Yes, I did, and I remember I had quite a painful sore arm for goodness knows how long. Obviously, I made a massive fuss about it and tried to get as many sympathy points as I could.
Yeah, knowing your mother and father, I doubt you got much sympathy, but at least you tried.
I got pretty short shrift.
I can imagine knowing them both. We've got a bit of a problem, though, haven't we? Because at the moment, I quote from the newspaper, 83.7% of five-year-olds have had both MMR shots. And in some parts of the country, I take you to Hackney in London, that's 58%. That must be a cause for concern for you and your colleagues.
It is a cause for concern. There's been a 10-year trend in declining take-up of vaccines. And I think, obviously, the vaccine hesitancy that came after the pandemic has definitely not helped. We are launching a range of campaigns, both national campaigns, public information campaigns, working with local public health authorities right through the country to explain the benefits, to explain that this is absolutely safe. The JCVI, the Joint Committee on Vaccinations and Immunization, is a world-renowned organization that has given this the full safety clearance. And we're also doing local campaigns. So we're targeting areas of the country. You mentioned Hackney. That is one of them where we're doing these catch-up clinics. And we're working with local GPs and schools and public health authorities to explain the benefits. Sadly, Nick, there is a lot of disinformation and misinformation out there. People going on social media and talking rubbish about vaccines, that is not helping. We are looking to combat that, and it's a really big part of this shift from sickness to prevention is one of the major three shifts at the heart of our 10-year health plan.
Minister, you mentioned this. Do you think a lot of this comes down to the misinformation that was peddled during the pandemic then?
Yeah, I think that that's a big problem. And, you know, we have to take these people on. We have to use evidence. We've got to remind people of the world-class quality of our scientists and of our medical professionals, and to be clear that the safety and health of our population is our number one concern, and we will always do everything that's required to protect them. And these conspiracy theorists who are peddling this nonsense and rubbish, we've got to take them on. We've got to defeat them in our arguments and drown out the noise that they're making. And that is what we as a government are committed to doing.
Well, before we move on, and for anyone listening in any doubt, it's worth saying, and I know that you'll attest to this as well, Minister, this is a sort of jab that's been used in the United States and Australia for many years. It's not as if the United Kingdom is just suddenly deciding to pioneer this. And you'll know better than I, the US has some pretty strict federal protocols.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we have had caution as the principal here. There is an argument that this should have been done earlier, but you'd need to get a minister on from the previous government to answer the question as to why that didn't happen. But we are now where we are. We've had the full green light. And obviously, with the schools going back next week, I will shamelessly take this opportunity, Nick, to just say to any parents out there who are listening to this show, please check that your child or children have had their jabs. Talk to your GP, make sure that they have. It's absolutely safe, absolutely beneficial to you and to the community more broadly.
Well, can I put it to you, actually, it's irresponsible to send a child to school next week or next month without the jabs, because it's risking other people's potential lives.
Yeah, I think we are all in this together. And I would urge parents in every community in the country to think exactly along the lines that you've just set out, that, you know, we do need to make sure that we make this shift from treating sickness to actually preventing sickness in the first place. It is such a common sense, an obvious thing to do, and let's all get behind this program. And hopefully, you know, the good publicity I hope that we're getting today around the chickenpox vaccine will also spark thoughts about other vaccines and jabs that need to be had.
Well said, Minister. Now, before I let you go, last couple of minutes together, I have to put some other stories to you. The Deputy Prime Minister, we now learn, has done nothing illegal, but one might question the morality of her dodging £40,000 on stamp duty. Are you going to do a better job than Manchester United and defend her?
Sorry. Look.
Come on, Harry Maguire. What's the defence?
Some of my best friends are Manchester United fans, Nick, so I'm going to have to tread carefully on this one. Look, the Deputy Prime Minister has made it absolutely clear she's done absolutely nothing wrong. I do wonder sometimes about some of the newspapers out there that just seem to be sort of constantly looking to dig out stories.
Stephen, come on. It's the morality, sir. Come on. It is do as I say, not do as I do, isn't it?
As far as I can understand it, I'm not absolutely involved in it, of course, in the detailed discussions, but my understanding from the statement that's come from the Deputy Prime Minister's office is that she's done absolutely nothing wrong.
I know.
Everything that she's done is fully within the law and the sort of practice of that, and that is the
situation. We've known each other forever, Stephen. We've known each other for a long. Are you honestly not saying that the DPM moving her name from the deeds of her house in Greater Manchester weeks prior to buying the seaside flat in Hope, you're saying that has no stink to it at all, Mr. Kinnock?
I am very clear in terms of what the Deputy Prime Minister's office has said, and what Angela is saying clearly is that this is not an issue. She has complied with the letter of the law, and that is the situation as we find it today, this morning.
Let's move finally to another of your colleagues. This is the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves. Now we have the boss, or the chairman of ASDA, saying, stop taxing everything. The wheels have come off the financial policy. Everything was not fully costed, was it? This is a financial shambles, Minister.
Well, you obviously would not expect me to preempt the budget on your show, Nick, much as I'm sure you'd like me to do that. So I'm not going to comment on it matters of tax, because that is a matter for the Chancellor. What I would say is we've got the strongest growth in the G7. We've got wages going up. We've got a significant increase in the minimum wage. We've got better rights for workers coming down the track. We have stabilized the economy after the chaos of Liz Truss and the mini budget. And we are getting, we're fixing the foundations. We inherited a mess, both in terms of public finances, both in terms of anemic growth in our economy. We've got to get that right. Of course, there's a huge amount more to do. But what I would say is that also thanks to the measures that Rachel Reeves put in place last October, we've generated an additional £26 billion to invest in our NHS, which is getting the waiting list down, getting more GPs on the streets, getting 700,000 more urgent dental appointments into the system. Right. So a lot done, a lot more to do.
And lastly, one more story to put to you. We learned that thousands of pounds is being spent by the Home Office on staff to teach balloon craft and floristry to migrants who are awaiting deportation, nearly £170,000 a year. Is that wise money wisely spent, Minister?
No, it's not. I'm very pleased that my colleague Seema Malhotra, the Immigration Minister, has instructed MITI to remove those jobs from being advertised. They're clearly unnecessary. That is clearly excessive. And,
but how does it happen, Mr. Kinnock? How does this sort of thing happen, Mr. Kinnock?
Well, my understanding of it is they're contractually obliged to have some kind of physical exercise because you want to make sure that people aren't falling into ill health, because that just makes it even worse for the taxpayer if we're having to deal with that kind of thing. But this, it seems that there's been an excessive interpretation of those contractual obligations. And the Seema Malhotra, the Immigration Minister, I'm very pleased to say, has rapidly responded to this and instructed MITI to delete those jobs. And that is a good move on her part.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Get the jab. It's just the job to get the jab, as you've heard from Care Minister Stephen Kinnock here on LBC, where it's 8 o'clock. News is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, young children in England and Wales will be offered a free chickenpox vaccine on the NHS from January. It's hoped the rollout, alongside the MMR jab, will prevent rare complications and cut the time parents have to take off work. There will also be a catch-up campaign for older children. Health Minister Stephen Kinnock has told Nick it'll save millions of pounds in the long run.
It's going to be really beneficial from a health point of view, because it's great to be able to prevent chickenpox, which, as we know, if you contract it later in life in particular, can be quite dangerous. It's great for parents who won't have to scramble when their kids get chickenpox and you have to be out of school for 5 days at least.
Appeal judges will decide later whether to overturn a ban on using a hotel in Essex to house asylum seekers. The Home Office and the owner of the Bell Hotel in Epping are seeking to challenge a High Court injunction. The local authority successfully argued that planning rules had been breached. Chris Whitbread is the Conservative leader of Epping Forest District Council.
I've got worried parents because of what happened previously, and I just don't think the government is taking us to court again, taking us back to court again, on what was a good judgment by the last week for the people of Epping. They've taken us back to court, and they should be spending their time finding a plan to deal with the asylum problem.
Ministers have told the operator of an immigration removal centre to get rid of a series of job adverts. MITI had been seeking staff, including a tutor, to lead cake decorating, floristry and balloon modelling workshops. It says activities help manage the stresses of detention at the site near Heathrow. A suspended Labour MSP has been charged over allegations a secret camera was placed in toilets inside the Scottish Parliament. Colin Smith's security pass was deactivated by Holyrood authorities yesterday. He lost the Labour whip earlier this month after being charged with possession of indecent images. The maker of the weight loss jab Mounjaro has rode back on its sharpest price hikes in the UK. Eli Lilly had been expected to raise prices by up to 170% on Monday, but says it's now offering pharmacies a discounted deal. LBC reported earlier this week that supply had been frozen ahead of the pricing change. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 92.16. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather. Sunny spells and blustery showers, some quite heavy with some thunder. A high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
If I get my kid a phone, I'll be able to keep in touch with him all the time.
He'll be on it all the time.
Could walk to school by himself.
She could see something she shouldn't.
He could chat with grandma.
Friends. Trolls.
They can access anything on the internet.
They can access anything on the internet.
So, should I give my kid a phone?
Growing up with phones isn't always easy. Introducing EE Safer Sims. Sims that help moderate usage and shield harmful content on any smartphone. Choose EE Safer Sims. Only on the UK's best network.
To verify best network, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after eight on Friday, August the 29th. The stench of hypocrisy is almost overpowering. A deputy prime minister who clearly says, do as I say, not do as I do, as she legally dodges £40,000 worth of stamp duty. Why should we take any heed of what these people say? Plus, Minister for Future Roads. What an extraordinary job. Can we have a Minister for Old Roads? Lillian Greenwood, earlier this year.
We know that electric vehicles cost a bit more than diesel and petrol vehicles, and that's why we're offering this discount up to £3,750.
This is on EVs or electric vehicles, but it appears to have stalled and is in the wrong gear. I'll explain more and ask you, are you ready to shell out on an EV, an electric vehicle? All babies to be offered chickenpox vaccinations. Care Minister Stephen Kinnock told me just minutes ago.
Please check that your child or children have had their jabs. Talk to your GP, make sure that they have. It's absolutely safe.
How your money is being spent by the government to give lessons on ballooning and floristry to migrants prior to deportation. And a right royal reconciliation?
I would love reconciliation with my family. You know, there's no point in continuing to fight anymore. As I said, life is precious. I don't know how much longer my father has.
As it is reported that Prince Harry will meet with his father, the King.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Let's get it straight from the outset. Nothing here is illegal, but it's the look, or if you like, the smell, the whiff of it, really. Deputy Prime Minister and Housing Secretary Angela Rayner has saved £40,000 of stamp duty on her new seaside home after telling tax authorities it was her main home, reports the Daily Telegraph. She's understood to have removed her name from the deeds of her house in her constituency in Greater Manchester just weeks prior to buying the £800,000 seaside flat in Hove, next to Brighton, in Sussex, a couple of months ago. They are legal, but the changes enabled her to avoid paying £70,000 stamp duty, which would have been applicable if Hove was her second home. Instead, as is reported, she's paid £30,000. The newspaper also reports that yesterday the spokesman for the Deputy Prime Minister repeatedly refused to say how much stamp duty she'd paid on the Hove flat, but denied any wrongdoing, which is very much the line we're hearing. Now, in the first hour of the show, I spoke with Sir Grant Shapps, who served as Defence Secretary as recently as last year and held other senior roles as well. What was his view of this?
I don't care if people have second homes. What I can't stand is the sheer hypocrisy of this Labour sort of government, and particularly a more socialist member of that government, which you have in the Deputy Prime Minister, going out and saying, you can't do this, but not only will I do it, whether it's taking advantage of right to buy or purchasing more properties or seemingly using tactics that avoid tax. But you can't do it. And I think it's the hypocrisy that people can't stand. And I'm afraid, same with every Labour government, they do this, they leave unemployment higher, and they leave more people on the dole, as we're seeing, and taxes higher and the rest of it, and it's all playing out as is standard, I'm afraid, with a Labour government, and it ain't good.
Within the last quarter of an hour, I also raised this with Care Minister Stephen Kinnock, and he told me, like his colleague Matthew Pennycook earlier this week, that there's no story here.
The Deputy Prime Minister has made it absolutely clear she's done absolutely nothing wrong. I do wonder sometimes about some of the newspapers out there that just seem to be sort of constantly looking to dig out stories.
Stephen, come on. It's the morality, sir. Come on. It is do as I say, not do as I do, isn't it?
As far as I can understand it, I'm not absolutely involved in it, of course, in the detailed discussions, but my understanding from the statement that's come from the Deputy Prime Minister's office is that she's done absolutely nothing wrong.
I know.
Everything that she's done is fully within the law and the sort of practice of that, and that is the
situation. We've known each other forever, Stephen. We've known each other for a long. Are you honestly not saying that the DPM moving her name from the deeds of her house in Greater Manchester weeks prior to buying the seaside flat in Hove, you're saying that has no stink to it at all, Mr. Kinnock?
I am very clear in terms of what the Deputy Prime Minister's office has said, and what Angela is saying clearly is that this is not an issue. She has complied with the letter of the law, and that is the situation as we find it today, this morning.
Let's get interpretation from Sebastian Payne, who's leader, writer and columnist for The Times newspaper. Sebastian, what do you see here? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think you've nailed it, actually, in the last interview with Stephen Kinnock here. I don't think anyone is accusing Angela Rayner of rule-breaking, although there are some suggestions there may be a parliamentary investigation into what designates her primary home. But it's actually just the raw politics of it here, that we're limbering up to this budget in the autumn that is likely going to see significant tax rises, which may include changes on council tax, not ironically at all, for second homes. And that's really the issue here. The whole thing looks incredibly tin-eared because it's about what Miss Rayner is doing in her day job, not really what she's doing with her properties, that I think most of your listeners would say if someone can afford a second home, then fine, they've earned it. They can, you know, they can spend their money as they want. But it's the fact that Miss Rayner is doing this at exactly the same time her government is looking at raising taxes, potentially council tax on second homes, potentially changing inheritance, potentially changing what landlords can do when it comes in terms of their national insurance. You know, all these things are going to have a real impact on people who do own homes. And I think the idea that that you can have Labour spokespeople just saying, well, there's nothing to see here, I don't think that'll wash at a time when, you know, belts are pretty tight and the government is clearly having to look at tax rises when it comes to the next budget.
Sebastian, I know you've got an appointment to get to. Final question. Are we getting close to a situation where the so-called working-class darling of the left is becoming even a liability to the party?
It's a fascinating one, isn't it? Because, you know, the question of what would happen if Sir Keir Starmer very sadly found himself under a bus has always been Angela Rayner is the favourite and the darling of Labour grassroots because her politics are more to the left of the party, where the kind of heart, if not the minds of Labour members are. And the fact is that, you know, last year there was a leaked memo that showed lots of much more left-wing economic policies that she would enact, you know, were she in charge of the Labour Party. And I think if Sir Keir Starmer does start to enter political turbulence in the years ahead, then you could imagine Miss Rayner would be a leading contender to replace him. And in that instance, you know, these sorts of things will start to matter because it will be about her judgment, her politics. And I think that starts to look into question about her properties. And not for the first time we went through all this about when she sold her house in Manchester last year.
I'll let you get on. Sebastian Payne, thank you. Thanks, Seb. Leader, writer and columnist at The Times, 11 after 8. Listening, Marina Perkis, who is a political commentator and co-hosts the podcast The Trawl. And I'm told you possibly side with some government ministers. You don't really see a story. Is that correct, Marina? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I find this story, this, again, I'm going to tell you it's a non-story, but we know that you turn into an investigative journalist, Nick, with a moral compass when it's someone on the opposite side. Because
I'm happy to expose everybody if I get the chance.
Well, Nick, I don't recall you asking Rishi Sunak to be very open with his blind trust. I don't recall you asking Boris Johnson to publish every single receipt.
I asked him how many children he had.
Okay, that's not what I'm asking. Oh, right. What about asking Farage when you have him on for a little belly tickle, who bankrolls him? Or asking Richard Tice about his offshore trusts?
I've asked Mr. Tice about the latter of those two.
I hope your listeners can see this for what it is.
This is
the media class, including yourself, telling working class people, especially a woman, especially a northern one, to stay in their lane, right? Because the fascination with Angela Rayner, whether it's 20 grand here or 40 grand there, when legally she's done nothing wrong.
I've always said, Marina, there's nothing wrong legally.
So why the constant hours, Nick? You must be bored of it.
No, I love it.
Great, because you, I guess it's a currency.
I love exposing politicians when they
hypocritical. I wish you would. I wish you had done.
I cannot believe you don't see any hypocrisy here, Marina.
Okay, tell me where the hypocrisy is. Let's discuss that.
This is someone who is a lawmaker who has legally, weeks prior to buying a flat in Hove, shifted the what we understand to be her prime residence from her constituency home to avoid paying £40,000.
Okay, that, so let's agree.
And it's nothing to do with the fact she's a woman. If it was Ed Miliband, I would do the same.
Right? She has navigated a system, whether you like it or not, designed by the very people clutching their pearls. She has not said, and this is why all the people you just lined up there before I jumped on the call were saying hypocrisy, it's to do as I say.
Well, no, Stephen Kinnock defended her in fairness.
When has she said to people, when has she said to anyone, you can't do this? Well, the reason there are all these tax changes happening, like, for example, the second home premiums tax.
Which is going to come in, and she will support it, obviously.
Okay, Nick, did you ever tell your listeners the second home premium tax was Rishi
written by
Sunak's
the Conservatives?
Policy.
Yes, I did.
Yes. Under Boris Johnson's
level. And endorsed by this government. Yeah,
now,
started by the Conservatives.
Why do you think they've had to endorse it? It's not to punish people. It's because councils are so cash-strapped. Why are they cash-strapped, Nick? After 10-plus years of having their funding just
Well, maybe they're cash-strapped because they spend £200,000 giving balloon classes.
No, this is where you just... Really, Nick? This is where
it really, yes, I know. I find
this
it extraordinary as well, Marina.
Unserious.
It's happening at the Heathrow Immigration Removal Centre.
If you were responsible in this conversation, and you really ought to be, you would talk about the fact that local councils are crippled by the fact that they can't afford their social care. That's a massive, massive issue for council because we have a massive issue.
Why is there an aging and ailing population increase in diversity spending in some local authorities then if they're so financially crippled?
So if it's 110%, would you want to tell me in real terms? Real terms, what is that? What are we going from and to? Because it might be a very small amount of
but we can have diversity training, but we can't provide social care. How do you explain that away,
Okay,
Marina?
I'm going to tell you this, Nick, as a person who is a mother, right? Let me finish.
Well, I'm a father.
Black women die in childbirth far more than white women.
Sorry, what's that got
this
to do with diversity training?
If you'd let me finish,
authorities?
I could tell you. The reason we need diversity training anywhere in our public sector is to avoid stuff like that, because only when you bring in people from all different cultures and ethnicities can you address the issues specific to them. If you can't see that, Nick, I'm never going to get through to you. But I also want to just say the obsession with Angela Rayner. All working class people here should see this as an attack on them. This is the media class.
I don't know
saying,
how many working class people have £800,000 flats in Hove, Marina.
Do you not think people like
good luck
myself,
to them, by the way.
I started out very working class, right? And I'm all for the working class doing well for themselves.
Absolutely.
And buying their properties,
absolutely.
Right? So why are you putting a cap on her ambition?
I have enjoyed our conversation. Marina Perkis is a political commentator, co-hosts the podcast The Trawl. We'll pick up on your views on that. And coming back to a story or something I mentioned with my contributor... Spending £165,000 a year to give balloon-making classes to migrants just prior to deportation. It really is. As a columnist, Lifeton writes, Richard Littlejohn, you couldn't make it up. 8:16 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
A health minister's told Nick that vaccine misinformation has become a big problem as the government rolls out free chickenpox jabs in England and Wales. Judges are to rule on whether to overturn a ban on asylum seekers being housed in a hotel in Essex. And a member of the Scottish Parliament has been charged over allegations a secret camera was placed in toilets at Holyrood. LBC weather. Sunny spells and blustery showers. A high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 remains closed westbound between junctions 9 at Ashford and 8 at Leeds Castle. It's all down to an accident and the emergency repair works are taking place. Two problems on the M25. Firstly, on the Essex stretch, there are anti-clockwise queues between junctions 28 at the A12 and 27 at the M11. It was after an accident that happened earlier. And then also on the western stretch, there are anti-clockwise queues to the M4 at junction 15. It's all down to an accident and there are delays back to junction 17 at Maple Cross. The M40 is very slow northbound up to junction 5 at Stoke and Church, and that's all down to an accident. And train services at Liverpool Street remain disrupted.
This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
I'm Dr. Andrew Darwood from the Darwood & Tanner Dental Practice. For over 30 years now, with co-founder Dr. Susan Tanner, we've assembled a dedicated and caring multidisciplinary team of dental experts who are at the forefront of their field, all with just one purpose in mind, creating the most comprehensive, tailored and complete dental implant treatments to keep you smiling.
For more on dental implants and our full range of treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in-store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's supply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
8:20, let's talk about Angela Rayner, Peter Ball. I'll come to your calls in just a moment. I was going to say that email, unfortunately, we still haven't got the emails sorted. I don't know whether we got Ruben Amorim on it, but we haven't actually resolved this yet. But as and when we do, I will let you know. Elizabeth Duffield in North London's come through with a text. That woman is wrong, defending the indefensible. Meanwhile, George says, well said, it's exactly what you think. We can see it for what it is. I don't remember the pearl clutching for those in the Tory party doing much worse. Peter Janamisham. Which is it, Peter? Good morning.
Well, she's just a hypocrite, and I'll tell you why she's a hypocrite. Because, first of all, if I did what she did, I would be guilty under Prevention of Social Housing for 2013. Luckily,
there's no law breaking here, though.
No. I'm saying, no. Hear me out.
Okay, sir.
If I did what she did now, I would be breaking the law because this law came in 2013. She did it between 2007 and 2010. However,
this is her previous property dealings you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
I thought you meant this one with Hove. Right, go on. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So she has said, and there's a video of her at a very boring meeting of the committee, so you can get an idea of her thinking on YouTube. So it's not me putting words in her mouth, it's coming out of her own mouth. She wants to get rid of the right to buy for council tenants. Now, whilst I agree with that, I think she benefited from that. She should repay the tax that she would have paid because she feels so, if she had the ethics and she had if she really believed in this to the core of her being, then the £48,500 profit should be repaid. Now, what she did, I mean, and you make your own decisions about, if you were living, if you were married with somebody, and you had two children, and you registered their birth, would you register them at a different address to where you were living?
No, I would. No.
So she went off the tax register, off the election that she registered at the other property. So, but the key thing is the law changed so that people in social housing tenancies can't let a room. They can't. They can't share a room. They can't have somebody on their sofa. I'm only allowed even my children to see me three times a week. They're adults because they're adults. They can't stay here more than 3 days a week because this is social housing is such a thing. Now, if she had this passionate belief, then she should repay that tax because ethically, she is a hypocrite. And the fact that she's bought another house, well, I'd say good luck to her generally because I just believe people should, you know, good luck to whatever they do.
I agree with that. Peter, thank you. Good luck with what you're trying to do with your children. I'm sorry to hear about the dire straits in which you find yourself. Bal's in Stourbridge. Bal, how big a story is this? Good morning.
Nick, I love your half an hour in the car of right-wing bashing of the Labour Party and Labour members.
You can get 45 minutes if you like.
My journey, thankfully, only takes half an hour at this moment in time. I have to admit, Marina Perk has just nailed everything what I wanted to say.
Right. So it's okay to dodge tax?
No, it's not okay to dodge tax. Ask if you want to ask dodging tax, did you ask Richard Tice why he moved over to Dubai?
Yeah, I have actually asked
the likes of Nigel Farage how much tax.
Bal. How does that mean it's all right then?
No, I'm asking you, is it okay to tax? Is it okay for the owners of the Daily Mail to dodge tax?
I don't think... Okay, you're now getting on dangerous territory, because I'm sure everything the DMGT does will be perfectly legal, whether they explore all tax efficiencies. Good luck to them. So do I. Do you like to pay more tax than you need to, Bal?
No,
you probably have an accountant just as I do, who gives you legal, I stress, legal ways to minimise what you have to pay.
Fair share tax.
Yeah, like absolutely. Oh, boy, don't you worry. I pay my fair share. I do nothing illegal, but I will explore any efficiency, quite rightly.
Yes, exactly. And
isn't an efficiency, Bal. This is a dodge.
Angela Rayner has bought a house in Hove in Brighton, is that correct?
Yes, sir. £800,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Did she pay stamp duty on that?
That's the whole point. She's paid minimised stamp duty because she's removed her name from the home in Greater Manchester.
So she's used what most law-abiding...
Oh, because we've all got homes in Greater Manchester. We're all buying £800,000 flats in Hove, aren't we?
You haven't let me finish my point. She's
if you're not careful,
most
I might ban you from listening.
No, I wouldn't like to be banned.
I'm thinking of it.
I'm asking a question, and you're not letting me reply to your question. Okay, she's obviously employed an accountant, so she's employed an accountant who's paying national insurance. She's obviously employed a solicitor, so she's actually creating work for those people. Yes?
Well, that's an extraordinary way to...
No, brilliant. You're asking... She's bought the property.
So it's a make-work project for the deputy. We need every government minister to go around buying as many houses as they can, dodging tax because it's making work.
Well, Jeremy Hunt bought 10
Here we go. I'm not seeking to defend that either. Many of them have done egregious things.
Why don't you bang on about it when they do these things? The problem we have at this moment in time is that all the press in the UK is Tory-driven.
No, it's not.
They apart from the Daily Mirror and the Guardian. What about the Telegraph?
I would suggest the BBC is probably more left-leaning. Bal, I have enjoyed our conversation. Please understand, sir, you are not banned. I look forward to you listening to me on Monday. Have a great weekend, Bal, but I have got to get other folk on. Thanks, matey. Lee in Preston, 8:26. You're on the radio, Lee. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think, like your last call, I think Maureen has just absolutely nailed it. And I'm sure your producers won't be sharing that on social media, will they?
I don't know. Possibly.
Let's see. I think, like your last caller said, that, you know, do you lie awake at night thinking, how can you get to Angela Rayner?
No, I don't lie awake at night thinking of Angela Rayner.
The woman. It's pathetic, Nick.
I'm not obsessed with Angela Rayner. I promise you I'm not as... But I do think the fact that she is the housing minister and she's used a legitimate dodge to save 40 grand is a story.
It's a legitimate.
No, legitimate. No, legitimate, yes. Yes, yes.
Yeah, legitimate, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So she's done nothing wrong. You said to the last caller...
No,
you,
she's done nothing. It's the morality that one questions.
So you're banging on all morning about when she's not actually broke the law, she's done nothing wrong.
I know.
And like Marina said, you have Nigel Farage on tickle in his tummy, he's done all sorts, and you just let it all go. Richard Price, let it all go. Nick, you're obsessed with the woman.
Honestly, matey, I'm well, okay, I'll let you think that I... There may be some women I'm obsessed with, but honestly, Angela Rayner is not one of them. Lee, have a good weekend, thank you. Stevenage Steve, you're on the radio, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. How are you? Long time no speak.
Good to have you on. What's the view from the heart of Hertfordshire?
Well, listen, I've got skin in this game because we just bought a place on the south coast.
In Hove?
Not in Hove, but in Sussex.
Right. Worthing?
No, a bit further towards
Bognor Regis.
No, sir. Kid. I wouldn't live in Bognor Regis. I don't like the sound of it.
All right. Lovely place. Are you going to tell me the town you've moved to? Or your old house?
It's near Rye. All right. It's near Rye.
That's one of the five Cinque Ports. One of the Cinque Ports.
Beautiful place. Jazz festival at the weekend.
What's the hotel? Is it the Angel or the Mermaid, the hotel in...
Yeah, there's the Mermaid up the Cobble Streets. Yeah,
it's a beautiful part of the world. Well done.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it's our retirement plan, see? So our plan last year or this year was to sell our place in Hertfordshire.
Yeah.
Now, because the current government have spoilt the housing market, nobody's buying a two-bedroom cottage in Hertfordshire at the moment. There's far too many new houses that people are buying. So we couldn't sell it, so we had to rent it, okay?
Oh, right.
Which
okay.
is fine.
Yeah.
That was an idea. So we own that. We've got a mortgage on it. Because we couldn't sell our house, we needed to mortgage to buy the house that we're going to buy. So we've got two mortgages now, yeah.
Yeah.
But it also means because we own two houses, we had to pay the extra 5% stamp duty, which is what this young lady's avoiding.
Yes. How do you react to that then, Steve?
I mean, it's hypocritical from somebody in her position. She knew exactly what she was doing. My wife and I could have done it. We could have taken our names off one of my names off the deeds in the house in Hertfordshire and had just one name and pretended we lived apart and separated and all the rest of it. But the problem with that is, of course, we have two mortgages. So the mortgage companies would not allow us to do that, even if we wanted to, because they use our joint income, right? So I'm assuming that the young lady who's bought the house in Hove doesn't require a mortgage. So question really is, where does she get the money from? And the other question I would ask is, it's only half the story you're telling, is how much council tax is she paying in Brighton? Because officially, if you have a second home, you should be paying double council tax. Right?
Mm.
So is she paying double council tax or is she only paying single council tax?
Steve, I don't know. One thing I do know, two things I know. This story is not going away and there will be more, almost certainly in the Daily Telegraph and other papers tomorrow. So we will learn far more. I do know that she would, if she's removed her name from the house in Greater Manchester, that means possibly her home now, Hove, is her main home. And the other thing I know is that I envy you, Rye, it's such a great part of the world. Enjoy the time there with your wife and enjoy your retirement. Steve, I hope we talk again soon. Coming up after the news, all babies to be offered... Did you ever have chicken pox, by the way, as a child? It's really painful. Care Minister Stephen Kinnock told me...
Please check that your child or children have had their jabs. Talk to your GP, make sure that they have. It's absolutely safe.
But why is the take-up of MMR, which will now be added, it'll become MMRV, MMR, at a 15-year low? Are you responsible enough not to have the MMR for your child? I won't be angry. I'll just explain why you wouldn't want to protect your child's health. It seems strange to me. You might want to give me a call. It's 8:31, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. Calm down, Nick. News, Thomas Watts.
A free vaccine for chickenpox is to be rolled out on the NHS in England and Wales from January. The jab, which is currently only available privately, will be given to babies alongside the existing MMR vaccine. A health minister's told Nick that Angela Rayner has done absolutely nothing wrong in a new tax row. The Deputy Prime Minister reportedly saved £40,000 in stamp duty by declaring a flat in Brighton as her main home. Judges are to rule on whether to overturn a ban on asylum seekers being housed at a hotel in Epping. The Home Office and the hotel's owner are trying to challenge a High Court injunction granted last week. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers. Some of those will be pretty heavy with the odd rumble of thunder. A high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
The Harwoods upgrade event starts on the 4th of September. Upgrade your car with our bespoke offers to a new 75 registration at Harwoods Audi Southampton and Portsmouth, or a premium used model at Harwoods Assured Chichester. Find out more at harwoods.co.uk. But don't delay, the event ends Sunday the 7th. Harwoods, family owned since 1931.
Calling all little wildlife explorers. Playmobil is now in Happy Meal. Look, is that a seal? And a sea turtle? They've been around for millions of years, just like me. Which will your little ones discover? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 14th of October, from 11 a.m, Playmobil comprised toys only, subject to availability.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy's Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
8:34. Graham in Bushy says the left are saying Angela Rayner's stamp duty is a non-story. Had this been a Tory minister or a Reform MP, they would be jumping up and down demanding their resignation. I think that's a very fair interpretation. Meanwhile, Sophia says leave her alone. She's not breaking the law. What is your problem? Do a better job, you. Bloody lazy journalist. Gosh, like being back with Verrupa. Matt's in Dartford. Matt, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Interesting text. It's just a really quick one about being in public office. Yes. And having a code of ethics, having a code of conduct to follow. And it's about, for me, I don't care if you're out of public sector, you're not in a role like a minister or an MP, anything like that.
Yep.
If the system allows for it, you do you. It's your own morality. You've got no one else to answer to. But when you're in the public eye talking about things, especially as a socialist as well, not a capitalist,
yep.
I just believe that it's morally wrong that if you're the MP for Manchester, your main residence is 300 miles away, or even as a deputy prime minister, should be based in London, and I appreciate that. It's a very important job. You're still hundreds of miles away from London. It's not. Yep. It can't be your main residence. It's just. I'd rather people just on the left were like, do you know what? Actually, she's kind of made a bit of a mess up here, and she's not got this one right, and she should apologise. And I think people would just let it go.
If you were working in her what they call comms team, in her communications team, what would you be saying to her now? How do we? If she says, okay, how do we tidy this up? What does she need to do in your view, Matt?
I think she even needs to come out and hold her hands up and say, do you know what? It was a silly mistake to make, and I probably shouldn't have done it. And then actually, it'd be costly for her. I think she should just pay the stamp duty that she should have done. Because at the end of the day, you can't preach. I mean, there's tweets, which I'm sure you'll see on your timeline today, but there's tweets from years ago that she's literally saying tax dodgers need to be tackled, tax avoiders need to be tackled. She's literally saying this about housing as well, which is comical. And what I think is, I don't care what people do. Like, if the system allows you to do something, do it. But if you're in public office and you're going to try and preach to me about it, you need to act as you say. You need to say, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to follow away. Now, as much as I'm not a fan of Jeremy Corbyn whatsoever, most of his political life, give it to him, doesn't claim excessive expenses, doesn't dodge tax. He's a very by-the-book guy.
No, I agree with you. And I think your aspect on public like that you've absolutely nailed it. That's the point I've been trying to get across, I think. It won't go to some because they see it as an attack on women, working class women, or even working class northern women. But I think you nailed it, Matt. Thank you. Ken, you'll be the next caller on that. But let's come back to something, a very important story, by the way. And I'm distressed to see that the take-up of MMR is at a 15-year low. Now, I know much of many of you will not see that Angela Rayner's actions here are questionable. You still think that the vaccinations we had during the pandemic were wrong. I don't subscribe to that. I think they saved many, many lives, not just in this country, but across the whole of the world. And it is important to have the MMR. No, it's vital to have the MMR. Why would you want to risk the health of your child? Speaking as a father, there's nothing more important than the health of your children. Nothing. So why wouldn't you want to avail themselves of the best care? So go and get the MMR, which has now become the MMRV, a vaccination now against chickenpox, as explained by Care Minister Stephen Kinnock.
And I think, obviously, the vaccine hesitancy that came after the pandemic has definitely not helped. We are launching a range of campaigns, both national campaigns, public information campaigns, working with local public health authorities right through the country to explain the benefits, to explain that this is absolutely safe. The JCVI, the Joint Committee on Vaccinations and Immunization, is a world-renowned organization that has given this the full safety clearance. And we're also doing local campaigns. So we're targeting areas of the country. You mentioned Hackney. That is one of them where we're doing these catch-up clinics. And we're working with local GPs and schools and public health authorities to explain the benefits. Sadly, Nick, there is a lot of disinformation and misinformation out there. People going on social media and talking rubbish about vaccines, and that is not helping. We are looking to combat that.
Well, let's put some of those points to Dr. Bharat Pankhania, who's senior clinical lecturer at the University of Exeter Medical School and a public health expert. Talking about the problems of social media. Would you concur with that, sir? Good morning.
Yes, hello. Good morning, Nick.
You think so? Thank you. Do you think social media is partly to blame here?
Partly to blame, Nick. I think this is multifactorial, and the multiple factors are probably as follows. Number one, complacency. In other words, vaccines are so good, we are not encountering as many illnesses as we once would have had we not had the vaccines. So people get complacent because they haven't seen the illnesses. The second bit, of course, is sometimes the access to the vaccines. In other words, you know, getting to your GP surgery, missing an appointment, and then it's so difficult to get that new appointment, and then parents forget, and then it just gets forgotten. And then, of course, there is the conspiracy theories. And then finally, one more bit is, look, the governments should have been acting on this misinformation and the complacency and the difficult access to the vaccines a lot earlier. I mean, I remember in the 1990s when we had the MMR issue about single jabs or multiple jabs. Mm. I used to sit down with the patients, my you know, the parents of the children, and explain to them. I used to spend time, and I used to make the vaccines available as required, you know, PRN, as required. Pop into the surgery, we will vaccinate you. All of those actions helped us in Brecon, where I was a GP, have high uptake levels.
How would you ensure, if I take you to an area of London called Hackney, you'll be very concerned to hear the rate is down to 58%. How do you get the message across, Doctor?
So this is where shoe leather epidemiology is required. And I say this to my fellow consultants in communicable disease control, get off your backside, get off your desks, go and be there in person. In other words, you've got to stand up there, go to the schools, go to the toddler groups, go to where the mothers with their babies are and talk to them, inform, advise, reassure them, and that is the way. Otherwise, if you give them leaflets and you say you're going to have a campaign of writing letters and sending leaflets, it doesn't work. You need to stand up there in person and talk in their language and answer their questions and address their worries.
For mums and dads listening now, debating, oh, I'm not sure about the MMR, wasn't there a problem with it? And all that COVID vaccine, hasn't it caused problems? Can you spell out, Doctor, just how serious in adulthood diseases such as whooping cough, measles, mumps can be?
It's extremely serious. So I look at MMR and I say this, measles is utter misery.
Yeah.
It will knock your child off several months from their schools or nursery schools, etc. And also, measles cannot be taken lightly because 1 in 100,000 cases, unfortunately, also results in what we call a delayed death, subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. It's very serious.
And grateful for your time, Doctor. I must leave it there. Thank you. Bharat Pankhania is a senior clinical lecturer at the University of Exeter Medical School and a public health expert. Doctor, thanks. 8:42. Might take calls on that. Actually, some of you are Here we go. Erica, I've never been remotely anti-vax, but after seeing what happened with the COVID vaccine, I'm avoiding all vaccines possible. Yes, that was the vaccine that saved, well, in this country, thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of lives, millions of lives around the world. Please, please. I guess you're never for turning. If you think the vaccine caused cancer or, I don't know, caused people to die or whatever it might be, I'm never going to convince you. And I respectfully think you're wrong. So let's disagree agreeably, as that expression goes. But we're talking about Angela Rayner. Ken's in Braintree. Ken, one of your family's just bought a house, is that right? Good morning.
Well, yeah, my daughter's just bought a house, and
lovely.
I
well
loved
that
bloke who was doing the comedy routine earlier about the solicitors. That was brilliant. And the health minister, anyone can do it. Well, the situation with my daughter was that her partner had been living at another house and was on the mortgage for that.
Oh, right.
And had moved out years before he'd split with his previous partner.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he was left on the mortgage. And when they came to buy their current house, which was my daughter's first house, which was around about £320,000, he couldn't change his primary place of residence. So they got hit with £7,000 worth of stamp duty.
When was the last time he lived at the other house, Ken? How long had he been away?
3 years ago.
Good Lord.
So there again, can anyone do it? No, they blooming all can't, Nick. I see she's talking out of her armpit.
And that cost your daughter and her boyfriend £7,000?
£7,000 on top of a £320,000 house that they were buying.
I wonder what your daughter would say about that. Have you spoken to her about this yet?
Well, can she do it? Can we do it retrospectively?
No. I say no. I can't imagine that you would. Obviously, that's a question for a solicitor, but I can't see, Ken, that it can be done. But it... I tell you what, we have a legal hour, don't we, with Daniel Barnett on LBC, and I think it's tomorrow night. I've no idea. Someone will call in my ear in a moment if I wave enough time. Saturday at 9, hopefully I've just heard. Right, 9 p.m, call in tomorrow, and Daniel, who is absolutely brilliant at all matters, will be able to answer the question on behalf of your daughter. Ken, thank you very much indeed. David, you'll be the next caller on this. And coming up in the next hour... Up and away. Thousands of pounds, try £165,000, are being blown by the Home Office, hiring staff to teach matters such as floristry and balloon craft to migrants. This is prior to them being deported from the Heathrow Immigration Removal Centre. This immigration row just won't go away, will it? You're listening to LBC Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari. 8:45, news headlines, Thomas Watts.
Young children in England and Wales will be offered a free chickenpox vaccine on the NHS from the start of next year. Appeal judges are to decide whether to overturn a ban on using a hotel in Essex to house asylum seekers. And a suspended Labour MSP has been charged over allegations a secret camera was placed in toilets inside the Scottish Parliament. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 remains closed westbound between junctions 9 Ashford and 8 at Leeds Castle. It's all down to an accident and the emergency repair works continue. As a result, there are lengthy delays on the approach and on the surrounding routes, especially the A20 and also the M2. Now, elsewhere in Essex, there are delays of about 3 miles on the M25 anti-clockwise towards junction 27 at the M11. It's all down to an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. Also on the M25, but over on the western stretch, there are delays anti-clockwise from junction 16 at the M40 to 15 at the M4, and that was after an accident. And on the M40, there are northbound delays to junction 5 at Stoke and Church.
This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well,
Jane, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Ever want a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
As it's free to sell in your local area on eBay, I was thinking maybe I should sell that bench press. Oh, that's literally been benched. And this guitar that I've forgotten how to play. Must be the buyer for the chest of drawers I listed yesterday. And I'm still in my pyjamas. Be with you in a sec.
With new listing features, it's easy to sell for free in your local area on eBay. Download the app now. eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
Just because you can't see something doesn't mean it isn't there. You can't hold this in your hand or pack it in your bags. You can't touch it. But our network is around you, like oxygen. Near or far, we're there. That's why we've been awarded Best Mobile Network Coverage by Uswitch. O2, essential for living.
Based on Open Signal Awards, UK Mobile Network Experience Report, September 2024, to verify, see opensignal.com/UK Mobile Report.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk a little bit about the need to take up on this vaccine. So, as you've heard already, and indeed you heard from the Care Minister, the MMR will become the MMRV, replacing the MMR. It will be offered to more than 500,000 children each year in two doses at 12 and at 18 months. And it will be a, well, what they call, the government says, a lifesaver against several deadly diseases. Well, actually, yes, they can kill. But the concerning aspect, as we've discussed, is that it is now the take-up of MMR, obviously, because it's only just become MMRV, is at a 15-year low, and I'm urging you to get something done about that. Dominic says, parents were rightly concerned about taking mandatory jabs when it was MMR, and instead of letting people take staggered single jabs, manufacturers made it MMRV. Even if multiple jabs are safe, and they are, by the way, why don't we let people take single jabs without making them pay the full cost? OK, Dominic, I will read it out, but you do know that you should be doing it. One last one on this. Carly in Hitchin, I'd love to know how many anti-vaxxers are possibly taking fat jabs where there can be side effects and unknown long-term effects. That's interesting. That's a very good point, Carly. I wonder how many of those mums, dads, grandparents are on, what's it called, Wegovy, Mounjaro, Ozempic. God, I've got all three. That was impressive. Interesting point, Carly. Thank you for that. Now, let's talk about the possibility of a right royal reconciliation.
I would love reconciliation with my family. There's no point in continuing to fight anymore. As I said, life is precious. I don't know how much longer my father has. He won't speak to me because of this security stuff. But it would be nice to reconcile.
Now, what we do know is that Prince Harry, who you heard from, whom you heard there speaking with the BBC, will be in the UK next month. It is as yet not determined whether or not he will catch up with his father. He'll be here for the Well Child Awards, of which he is a patron, the organisation's patron. It's being held on September the 8th, which is also the third anniversary of the death of Queen Elizabeth II, the Prince's grandmother. And have we played you there? Harry has said he would love a reconciliation with his father. They've not met since Harry flew to London 18 months ago for 30 minutes with the King following his diagnosis with cancer. So your dad gets cancer, quite rightly you go and see him, and then you don't physically see him for 18 months. Speaking as a man who lost his father to cancer, I wish, and I spent as much time as I could, and I have to tell you, my employers at that time were fantastic when they heard that my father had terminal cancer. They were fantastic. I cannot stress the value of time spent, and I still go through moments, even now, particularly when you become a dad yourself. You go through the last moments you have with your own father. So it is to be hoped that they can get together. Kate Mansfield is a family relationships expert. There's no point beating about the bush here, Kate. There obviously have been issues between father and son. How is this to be put right? Morning to you.
Hello, yes, great to be here, thank you. Well, I mean, I think it's a good step forward. You know, obviously, Harry's been a bit of a renegade in terms of his role in the royal family. And actually, I think a lot of that's got to do with Diana's death and him, you know, being the younger of that and the impact of that. You know, we've seen, you know, him kind of... And actually, you know, I know that there's been a... the rift has been caused by a lack of trust in the view of the King and William in terms of, you know, Harry kind of airing a lot of their you know, their business in public and so on. But I certainly think this can be healed, and I think, you know...
So what would your advice be? What would you say to either or both of the men involved here?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, ultimately when we're trying to heal with a family member, you know, it's obviously... someone who can push all of our buttons, especially a parent. Parent-child relationships are one of the most difficult, one of the most triggering, upsetting, and you know, hurtful. So, I mean, I think the first step really is to come from a place of love and empathy, and that sounds obvious, but it's not always easy. So I think one of the best ways is to start a conversation or start the healing process by, instead of telling the person your grievances, offering an olive branch and you know, taking some accountability and coming with an apology. We can always find somewhere in a relationship that isn't working that we're playing a role, that we're playing a part. And so I think acknowledgement of that plays a huge role and is incredibly positive in terms of opening the door to have, you know, conversations that are constructive, move things forward in a loving way, as opposed to, you know, starting from a place of, well, these are all my grievances and these are, you know, the problems I've had.
So a degree of humility. I'm sorry if when I said this or when I did this, if that upset you or whatever it might be, that's possibly the starting point, Kate.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that goes a long way towards setting the tone. You know, I think often, you know, the tendency is to want to point the finger and to look at other people and what they've done to us. And sometimes those things are true. But, you know, true or not, I think most of the time we can heal if we want to. And, you know, even the most difficult relationships can absolutely be healed with the right approach.
Lastly, how difficult is it for these two, of course, because they are so much in the public eye?
Well, of course, that is, you know, incredibly difficult and adds a whole layer of pressure, you know, and I think, again, that's probably part of Harry's behaviour and the way that he's kind of behaved in you know, in a bit of a, like I said, a bit like an angry teenager, you know, even into his adult life. I think we can see why, because, you know, the pressure of being a royal, I mean, imagine, you know, you don't really have the choices that we have. And you know, I think he's done quite well, actually. You know, I think he's been very open about having therapy and he's played a big role in, I think, helping people to, you know, to normalise that and to getting help. So, you know, I wish them all the best and I hope they can figure it out, because...
I think we all do. Kate, thank you. Kate Mansfield, family relationships expert, 5 to 9. You might want to talk about that, but you are talking about Angela Rayner. Claire in Dorking, thank you for calling in. Hypocrisy, or just doing what any of us would do if we could, which is what some people seem to be saying. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yes, I have the quote from the Telegraph.
Oh, yes.
And the thing that smacks of blatant hypocrisy to me is that for stamp duty purposes, it says she has claimed that the Hove flat is her primary residence. But for council tax purposes, she is claiming that the Manchester property is her primary residence.
Oh, right. This gets even more complex then.
Exactly, yes, and that is definitely wrong. isn't it? One or the other. And if she is living in home, fine.
Just to clarify, I've caught up with you in the copy there. At the weekend, sources close to her said it was her mate. So there is something very, can I use the word fishy or dodgy going on here?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So when
people
say, I'm very grateful you called in, because I can put this to you in a way that I couldn't to a bloke. When I'm told by some commentators, oh, we're all doing this because it's a woman, do you buy into that?
No, that hadn't even occurred to me until the previous lady said that. And even then I was thinking, really? I don't think so.
No.
Because an awful lot of ministers get hauled over the coals for an awful lot of fishy stuff.
Mm. I think you've nailed it. It is. Thank you for reading that extra line in the copy, although it is sort of prior to how events have now moved on. But it's an important point you make, Claire, and I'm grateful to you. It's nothing to do with it being a woman. It's nothing to do with her being from the north. It's nothing to do with her being working class. It's to do with the look of it, just the simple look of it. Adam in St Albans. Adam, your point. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, good morning, Nick.
Hello.
Great show. Very, very quickly, I think we may agree that Andrew is playing within the Queensbury's rules here, so we've got that nailed on there. What I would like is you to put a call up to the guys, the constituents in Greater Manchester, to ask about whether it's a delegation of duty by Angela to be moving her main home down to Hove. Now, we all know that she's obviously working hard in her third area or space to live in Admiralty Arch. Then she pops down to Hove for a little wine and wander across the pebbles, and then possibly goes up to see a constituent at the weekend or whenever she is in her third home to talk to them. They're the ones who are being affected, the constituencies in Greater Manchester. Please put a call out for them to see what their thoughts are.
Brilliant idea. And I will now. And we will actually take this into the next hour. If you are one of Angela Rayner's constituents, and it's fair for me to say she seems to be playing fast and loose, as Adam rightly says with the rules, tell me, you may well have voted for her many, many times. Do give me a call. We'll fit you in, even if it's in the next hour, we might have moved on. Adam, thank you. Let's get one more caller in this. David in Hampstead. David, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Great show. Do you remember when we were told that adults are back in the room and all the sleaze is over and everything? I wonder whether Angela Rayner used Tulip Sadiq as a estate agent, Jonathan Reynolds as a solicitor, and Rachel Reeves as her accountant.
Oh, that is because absolutely brilliant.
I've just named, and there are obviously others. There's that Labour MP who's the bad landlord. There's all the rest.
Yeah, the homelessness minister.
Exactly. It just gets worse and worse. So, you know, again, homelessness. Well, I wonder whether he identified a property that was also vacant to then give to the estate agent. You know, and it's just, at what point do we say, just sit down, or maybe you could do this next time you interview one of them and say, listen, guys, come on. Like, you just talked rubbish.
That is so clever, that line. David, thank you. I will work that out. I might indeed write that in the paper this weekend, and I won't give you any credit, and everybody think I'm so clever. But it was David who came up with that idea, and the music means we must move on. Coming up after the news. Up and away. We're spending £165,000 a year to give migrants who are facing deportation lessons in balloon craft. Plus, why is fuel anxiety driving Gen Zers away from the pump? And if you are living in Ashton-under-Lyne and you voted for Angela Rayner MP since 2015 as the idea, good idea, what do you make of this row as she seems to play fast and loose with exactly where she lives? Those stories are more after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, free chickenpox vaccines will be rolled out for children in England and Wales from January. The jab will be rolled into the MMR programme, with two doses given to children when they're 12 and 18 months old. It's hoped it'll prevent complications and cut the time parents have to take off work. GP Dr. Sarah Jarvis has told LBC that vaccination gives very good protection.
This vaccine has been used for many, many years in other countries. It's been available since 1996 in the US. So we've got millions and millions and millions of children who've had it. And therefore the safety has been very, very carefully assessed.
A health minister has defended Angela Rayner in a fresh row over her housing arrangement. The deputy prime minister reportedly declared her new property near Brighton as her primary residence. That's said to have saved her about £40,000 in stamp duty. The care minister, Stephen Kinnock, has told Nick that Ms. Rayner has done nothing wrong.
As far as I can understand it, I'm not absolutely involved in it, of course, in the detailed discussions, but my understanding from the statement that's come from the Deputy Prime Minister's office is that she's done absolutely nothing wrong.
I know.
Everything that she's done is fully within the law.
The Court of Appeal is due to rule on an injunction blocking the use of a hotel in Essex to house asylum seekers. The Home Office and the owner of the Bell Hotel in Epping are seeking to challenge the High Court's decision from last week. An MSP has had his Scottish Parliament pass deactivated over claims a secret camera was placed in toilets at Holyrood. Colin Smith has reportedly been charged by police in connection with the allegations. He was suspended by Labour earlier this month after being charged with possession of indecent images. Industry leaders have told LBC that Britain's creative sector is facing an existential threat from artificial intelligence. Ministers have been accused of legitimising wide-scale copyright theft by failing to bring in AI protections. Naomi Pohl is head of the Musicians Union.
This could threaten many, many musicians' livelihoods, and we don't want to see that happen. It wouldn't be difficult for the government to put additional protections in place, and that's what we want to see as soon as possible, because there is a fear the horse has bolted to some extent because some models have trained on creative works already.
The government says it's firmly committed to ensuring rights holders are compensated fairly. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 6 at 92.09. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers, some heavy with the odd rumble of thunder, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
They've been building up to this all summer. Dad tucks into a tight 360 to the boot. A 90-degree rotation into the back seat from Sammy. And Mum with a flawless double twist into the driver's seat.
Dive into a new Škoda with 0% APR across our range and an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP. The Škoda Summer Splash event. At local retailers until 31st of August. Indemnities may be required. Maximum terms apply depending on model. Minimum 20% deposit for Kamiq and Karoq. Delivery by 31st of December 25. Škoda Finance.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after nine on Friday, August the 29th. Another aspect of the migrant story, the one that dominates headlines. And clever work by the Sun newspaper. They've discovered what they label as a balloonacy. Thousands of pounds are being spent by the Home Office hiring staff to teach balloon craft, floristry and other matters to migrants just prior to deportation. We'll ask how on earth money could be spent in that fashion. Plus, Gen Zers under attack yet again. Apparently, they find it very difficult to use the phone, as in a landline. Now, if they have one, they find it difficult to fill their car or their motorbike. The petrol pump says they are so anxious of filling up their cars. Seriously? Plus, most autistic people over the age of 40 in the UK, excuse me, are living without a diagnosis. If you were diagnosed later in life, what did that suddenly unlock? Did you realise the issues that you'd had at school, at college, university, possibly at work, possibly in relationships or with your family? Handling autism later in life is later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Whether it's the decision on the Epping Asylum Hotel, which is due around 2 o'clock this afternoon, whether it's the news now that the French police gendarmes will not be wading into the water and cutting those migrants' boats apart with large knives, whether it is just the ongoing row, whether it's the position taken by Nigel Farage, this migrant issue is never far from the front pages. But credit to the Sun newspaper, they've got a different aspect today, and they've discovered, as I said, thousands of pounds are being spent by the Home Office to teach balloon craft, floristry and other matters to people at the Heathrow Immigration Removal Centre prior to people being detained, many of whom are serious criminals, the paper says. So if you fancy a job as a gym manager, that's just under £39,000 per annum. Hairdressing tutor, £31,500. Painting and decorating tutor, also £31,500. hospitality and floristry tutor, again, 31,500, to proactively promote, design as necessary, and deliver workshops in relevant creative skills, including floristry, cake decorating, and balloon craft. George Pascoe Watson is a broadcaster columnist, former political editor, senior partner at the senior figure at the Sun, and now partner at Shillings, and joins me now. Let's start at the very beginning. The government's handling of this crisis, George, it's some time since I've spoken to you, and you've been watching this now for some months. What do you make of Sir Keir's handling of this? Have we got a man trapped in a sort of loyally fudge here? Morning.
This is a very, very bad situation for the government to be in. There's no question about it. And it is dominating the private polling that Keir Starmer is seeing. Yvette Cooper at the Home Office, the Home Secretary, has the biggest challenge here. And, of course, this is against the background of the government running out of money and facing a huge gap in the amount of money that we spend and the amount of money that we earn. This story really typifies the chaos that's going on in the government. And I would say it's probably, would be probably true of the last Conservative government as well. The issue here goes right the way back to the sheer numbers of people trying to come to our country, which is not going to stop anytime soon. And there's a debate raging, as you know, as to why that is and why we can't stop them. And the reason is because we are signatories to the European Convention. And that's a real, real problem, which is not easily doable with, because Keir Starmer has many, many Labour MPs who think he should be softer on immigration than the government currently is. So he's struggling. Any way he moves to make a big decision, he's going to find himself facing huge opposition.
He and his colleagues lauded the one-in, one-out deal. In reality, is that even worth the paper it's written on, George?
Well, according to those people who've looked very closely at it, it's not going to stand up to any scrutiny, really, in reality. And, of course, every day that goes by, we've got more people coming into this country seeking asylum, seeking what this country is very generous at doing, which is reaching out the hand of protection and sanctuary for people who really need it. And of course, that is not going to stop anytime soon. We've got coming to the end of this summer. Of course, the weather will change, and then those people coming over from France on boats will obviously reduce in number, but we still have many, many other avenues into this country. And the question is, are they legally here, and what can we do about those who are not legally here, and how quickly can we close down the backdrop? To that waiting list. And of course, doing that, making sure that backlog is reduced, requires more taxpayers' money for more assessors in the civil service to actually do the backlog. And of course, that costs more money, and we go right back to the Treasury, where Rachel Reeves is struggling to find many, many billions of pounds, which we don't earn, and we have to spend on pensions and the like.
George, you've seen a number of governments have a post-summer pre-conference reset. Indeed, I can recall you breaking stories about the reset that was on its way. How big a reset is required here?
Well, there is a very big reset required, and I think there is about to be one. There is, in the next couple of weeks or so, I think, a very, very big change happening in government ministers' roles, and I think also
senior ministers, George.
Senior ministers, and I think the machinations of government are going to change as well. There's going to be a very big change in the way that this government is run, and the civil service takes its course. And I think that's required, but that, some will say, will help a little bit, but in the end, you still need clarity from a prime minister with a very strong vision and an ability to take his party with him. Nick, there's a very strange thing. He's got a 170-seat majority, but he's got about 50, 60, 70 Labour MPs who are actually against him on most of the big decisions. So the majority on the face of it looks wonderful, but in reality, it's proving very, very hard for him to get anything done. And we've seen this with previous prime ministers. If you don't bring your party with you in the House of Commons, you can't get things done, and then the country drifts.
Always good speaking with you, George. Thank you. George Pascoe Watson, broadcaster, former political editor at The Sun, now partner at Shillings. Going to be ringing in journalist and broadcaster and author Polly Toynbee in a moment. But let's just remind ourselves specifically on this story. The government job advertisements to train failed asylum seekers, some of whom, by the way, are serious criminals, who are waiting deportation, to train them in floristry and balloon craft, defended by Care Minister Stephen Kinnock.
No, it's not. I'm very pleased that my colleague Seema Malhotra, the Immigration Minister, has instructed MITI to remove those jobs from being advertised. They're clearly unnecessary. That is clearly excessive. And
but how does it happen, Mr. Kinnock? How does this sort of thing happen, Mr. Kinnock?
Well, my understanding of it is they're contractually obliged to have some kind of physical exercise because you want to make sure that people aren't falling into ill health, because that just makes it even worse for the taxpayer if we're having to deal with that kind of thing. But this, it seems that there's been an excessive interpretation of those contractual obligations. And the Seema Malhotra, the immigration minister, I'm very pleased to say, has rapidly responded to this and instructed Mighty to delete those jobs. And that is a good move on her part.
Polly Toynbee, broadcaster, author, columnist at The Guardian, joins me now. Polly, is it becoming open season on anything or anything that might be provided for a migrant? Good morning.
Hello, good morning. Well, not mostly. I don't think migrants mostly have a very good time. But if these are failed, if their appeals are definitely not going to succeed, then it does seem a bit ridiculous to be training them up for jobs that they're not going to be qualified to take. But maybe these are people who may win their appeals, because an awful lot do. An awful lot of the first decisions made by the Home Office are wrong, significant numbers. And then in which case these people, if they are going to be allowed, because depending on the countries that they come from and the situation they've escaped, then we do want them to be trained and into work as fast as possible and out of official accommodation and on their own.
Do you subscribe to the view that the Prime Minister, the Home Secretary, have completely lost control of this issue?
Well, we've never had control. No government has had control of the issue. It is so, I mean, when you try and imagine putting a border all the way round our island, the idea that we are always going to be able to keep people away who don't have documents is unlikely. And I think governments have made a mistake to talk about stop the boats or smash the gangs. Promising what's impossible. It's a bit like a government official saying, we are going to ban all crime. You want to reduce crime as much as you can, but any minister who said, we are ending crime, it would be ridiculous. There are some things that are really hard to do, and you should be honest with the public. Now, my own view is that we should change the definition of what asylum really is, and that it should be done collectively by all the signatories of the international conventions, because the definition of an asylum seeker in 1951 was sort of, you know, a politician on the run from persecution, not anybody anywhere in the world, in a bad war situation, and there are so many wars around the world. But it has to be done collectively. You know, if we do this on our own, we say, right, we're out of these conventions. You know, what's France going to do to us? We need to do things together with France, together with Ireland, together with all the countries around us, and have a new definition of what entry into Europe should look like and should qualify.
Polly, thanks as ever. Enjoy your weekend. Polly Toynbee, author, broadcaster, columnist at The Guardian. Now, I've known Polly for many, many years. When someone, and she won't mind me saying, she's very liberal-minded, when someone like Polly Toynbee says we need to redefine what an asylum seeker is and refers back to when the convention was first started, 1950s, when quite rightly the whole world was in recovery from the ghastly horrors of the Second World War and the definition was different. And as she said, it cannot apply to someone who just wants to come from another part of the world because they want to live here. Liam, you'll be the first caller on that. Let's give you a good run. Also coming up after the news, are you or someone you know or love a Gen Zer? You have to have been born between 1997 and 2012 to qualify. If you are, apparently, we all know you have terrible problems avoiding phone calls and indeed even using a landline, as they're called, but now you find it very difficult to go to a petrol station because you can't handle the pump. God knows how you keep your car, van or motorbike going. We'll look at that in more detail. It's 9:15, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
A health minister's told Nick that vaccine misinformation has become a big problem as the government rolls out free chickenpox jabs in England and Wales. Judges are to rule on whether to overturn a ban on asylum seekers being housed in a hotel in Essex. And a member of the Scottish Parliament has been charged over allegations a secret camera was placed in toilets at Holyrood. LBC weather. Sunny spells and blustery showers. A high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 remains closed westbound from Junction 9 at Ashford to 8 at Leeds Castle. It's all down to an accident and there are severe delays on the approach and on the surrounding routes, including the M2 westbound, but also there was a separate accident right near Junction 5 at Sittingbourne, which has added to those delays. The western stretch of the M25 still very slow anti-clockwise at Junction 15 at the M4, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. The roads are very wet because of the heavy rain, including on the A2 westbound at Bexley up to the Danson interchange. There's a lot of standing water across the carriageway, so do take extra care. On the trains, all services to and from Liverpool Street remain disrupted, and delays for Southern and Thameslink via Horsham.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, you can save like a hero by switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving a super £35 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Save like a hero on your weekly staples, your fresh five a day and big brands. Lidl, the Which awarded cheapest supermarket in July.
Prices check 26/8 to 25. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears. Give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply. Subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's talk balloon craft with Liam in Folkestone. Liam, your reaction when you heard this story. Good morning.
Oh, hi, Nick. Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I'll be honest, I listen to you a lot, but I don't call in, and that's just because usually I just prefer to listen and don't feel I have to contribute.
Oh, wonderful. Then I heard about this. I would have a show story. If you would have already thought that, would I?
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
But this balloon story, when I heard about it from you, I thought, this is unbelievable.
It is.
Like, and it's prompted me to call it. You couldn't make it up, really. And then what happened is, I then Googled it and I went onto the Sun's article and I realised that you couldn't make it up, but what the Sun could do is exaggerate all of the facts.
Well,
and you could misrepresent it. So if I can just have a couple of examples.
Go ahead.
Once I scratched past the headline and looked at the details of the story, I found out, as has just been said by the Labour representative, that it's not the government that had spent that money employing them. It's Mighty, the contractor.
Yeah, but who pays
which
them?
Which I know the government are paying the contract overall, but Mighty have chosen to spend it on that.
Yeah,
and,
but who and pays Mighty?
Well, Mighty is paid by the government as a contractor.
£290 million.
I know, it's absurd, isn't it, for the whole contract.
Hmm.
But what no one's mentioned yet is that contract was actually agreed in 2014 by the Conservative government.
Yes.
Now, I have a very basic understanding of how third-party use contracts work and the 2P process and stuff. But even I know that that wouldn't have been listed then at the time as balloon-making sessions. It would have been under a bracket, unspecified, as recreational activities or leisure or things. It was agreed in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
That can't be changed unless you put the contract back up for tender and renegotiate. So, therefore, this is actually really nothing to do with the Labour government other than they are now in charge when this has come out. And but their response, as this as they found it out, has been to, no, review that, please, and pull that out.
Hold on. They didn't find it out, with respect. The newspaper found it out.
Well, okay, the newspapers found it out. Okay, but fair enough. But But their immediate response has been, you're right. You know, their paper is like, this is absurd. But what I think, we were talking about hypocrisy earlier on.
Yes.
And I mean, this is not you in general.
No, no, go ahead. You can, don't worry, you won't offend me, I promise you.
I just, no, the thing is, the thing that bothers me as someone who I think I'm quite, like, centre, right? I really don't have any political allegiances. And this is on both sides of any political argument, is that by the media, by social media, everything seems to be misrepresented somehow or twisted somehow. And how we then know what to believe. And it doesn't just affect things, it's the Labour government and things. This is part of the underlying thing with sort of the immigration argument, the George Flagg argument, right? There are people that genuinely have legitimate issues with it. There are people that genuinely are proud and patriotic British because they hang the George Cross, and that's why they do it. Mm. But we also know there are other people who aren't doing it
for the right reasons.
Are they?
Absolutely.
No.
I agree.
And the thing is, I know it doesn't seem like it's connected to the story, but it is, because every fact seems to be twisted into a narrative that we want to hear or that wants to be fed to us.
Right. But if lastly, I hear what you say, and you're absolutely right, the £290 million contract was not agreed initially by this government, but by the Conservatives. But if you have an issue as toxic as that, and we've just heard from a partner at Shillings, former political editor, that they are polling regularly, and Sakir is being told that the migrant issue is the number one concern by some, wouldn't you want to own everything you possibly could? Wouldn't you just get every minister round and say, right, on a Thursday afternoon, I want to know every spit and cough and every dollar that goes out of this place to sort out this? And then someone would say, Prime Minister, do you know we're giving people balloon lessons in Harmondsworth? Isn't that what you do?
I agree. I absolutely would. And I do think it's that money's being spent on that.
Yes.
But the reason I called is, you didn't like the story, you didn't like that headline. I understand that. But had I not looked further, or had I not listened on and heard the Labour government and listened to the headline that you reported, that this government in money or £200,000 on balloon classes for immigrants, that would have been my takeaway. And although you didn't write that headline, I do think as a journalist, not just you, but everyone, has a journalistic responsibility to make sure that they're presenting the fact.
All right. The line is breaking up, Liam. I really did enjoy our conversation. Have a good day down on the Kent coast. Indeed, have a nice weekend down on the Kent coast. And we will return to this conversation. Dave saying, that man has nailed it, showing what a hypocrite you are and your mates in a rags like the sun. You do it all the time. You're an embarrassment. Dave, do keep in touch. Thank you. Let's come to other matters. Would you want to have been born between 1997 and 2012? Were you born between 1997 and 2012. Now, in some ways, I envy you, in that you've got a lot more of your life to live, all being well, than I have. In other ways, I don't, because everything seems so tough for you if you're a Gen Zer. For instance, we know you try and avoid phone calls. You don't like using landlines. In some instances, you might not know how to use a landline. And now, you're frightened of petrol stations. 6 in 10... young drivers, Gen Zers, born 1997 to 2012, so you can work out what age you are, 6 out of 10 are so anxious that they're afraid of filling up their cars. It does seem incredible, doesn't it? Younger drivers are also frightened, as it says here, of sky-high fuel prices. Well, we're all frightened of that. But this group also fret over tasks such as parking close enough to the pump, identifying the correct type of fuel, and it says here, confidently operating the nozzle. I don't know if I confidently operate it. I mean, I just, amazingly, you press it, it comes out. They also get worried about queuing to pay. Gosh. Joe Hemmings is a behavioural psychologist. I'm going to guess you weren't born between 1997 and 2012. When you hear of these anxieties, would you want to have been? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. No, I don't think I would want to have been born in that period. I mean, it's very worrying because these are everyday, daily tasks. that they're becoming, it's a fear of failure in public places that they have, but there's a generalized anxiety about so much now. I get the fuel. I know what it's been like. I've been there where you fill it just to the point you can afford it rather than fill a full tank. That's completely understandable.
Oh, right. Okay. I hadn't thought of that. That's fair enough. Yeah, I get
but
that.
But the fear of not being in the right place, parking your car in the right place, or how to put the nozzle in seems really worrying. Because what happens, this study also revealed that 25% of them run out of fuel on the road because of it. Now, there really is something to be anxious about, because you're stuck, God knows where, with no petrol in your car. So, you know, it's a bit of sort of actions and consequences. It's this sort of really low-lying general anxiety that so many of this generation have about so much more than you could ever imagine. And when it comes to a daily, everyday task like this, it's really quite distressing.
How do we help them?
Look, I've always said we need to go back to teaching, firstly, resilience in schools.
Ooh, I like that, but how do we teach it?
Well, understanding that there is a degree of everyday normal stress in our life. We do have it. If we get anxious about things like exams, taking driving tests, there are coping mechanisms we can learn. There are breathing techniques. There are all sorts of things that we can learn to cope with particularly stressful situations. But some stress is absolutely key to life. We can't survive without it. So it's simply knowing these things. It's knowing the boundaries of what is a normal level of anxiety that we all go through at times, and what is something that takes a hold on them that they become literally unable to perform simple everyday tasks. I just feel that message is not getting through. If anything, it seems to be being exacerbated.
Lastly, I mean, we're looking at the Gen Zers, 1997 through 2012. We probably should be asking questions about their parents, because they will have some way contributed or not addressed this anxiety, Jo.
Yeah, I don't know how much parents realise that much anxiety goes on, how much this generation share their concerns with their parents. But if it's something like filling your car up with fuel, you know, take your child there, open the nozzle, get the pump out, push it in, show them how to press it, and then they go and pay for it. You know, give them that instruction, show them it's quite easy, just you need to park where, close to where the nozzle is on your car. It's as simple as that, but, you know, it is really absurd to me that we're getting to this level of anxiety about something so straightforward.
Jo Hemmings is a behavioural psychologist who is not a Gen Zer, but we both share sympathy on that. We're getting some texts coming in on that. Not many emails yet. Ed in Canterbury, it's social media. They're worried about being filmed, making a mistake, and then it would go viral. Isn't that awful that you'd be so frightened? Mark says, imagine the Gen Zers panicking, running out of petrol. Imagine when they drive an EV that they all go on about. Once that runs out of juice, you can't even push to the side of the road. They'll really panic then, says Mark in Lee Green. Other emails, just to a couple of other subjects. Cry God for Harry, England and St George. Let's look at the hopeful reconciliation there. Lenny in Tower Hill says, what great news. At last, those two will get together. You cannot have family rifts going on like this. And it is, of course, Angela Rayner that's still making the news. This is Simon in Surrey, the point everyone is missing. Labour moan constantly about people who legally avoid tax. That's what makes her hypocritical. Remember the £40,000 she's dodged, and I am allowed to say that, would pay for a police officer or a nurse for a year. We'll come back to that, possibly. Now, after the news, we've done quite a lot of health, haven't we? We've talked about autism. We've talked about vaccine for our younger listeners, for babies. We're talking about autism for older people now. Most autistic people over the age of 40 are living without a diagnosis. So if you were diagnosed later in life, did you suddenly realise why you had issues at school, at university, at college, possibly at work, possibly in a relationship, possibly with your mum and dad? I discovered I was autistic in my later life, in my 30s or 40s or 50s, but what did it mean for you? We'll look at that in more detail. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. It's 9:30. Headlines then. Thomas Watts.
A health minister's told Nick that misinformation around vaccines has become a big problem. Free chickenpox jabs are to be rolled out in England and Wales from next year, while childhood vaccine uptake remains at a 14-year low. Judges are to rule on whether to overturn a ban on asylum seekers being accommodated at a hotel in Essex. The Home Office and the owner of the Bell Hotel in Epping are seeking to challenge a High Court injunction. A government contractor has been told to remove a series of job adverts for roles at an immigration removal centre near Heathrow. Mighty had been seeking candidates for roles including a hospitality and floristry tutor, who'd also be responsible for teaching balloon modelling. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's do the full age range, as I said just before the news. We spoke in the first hour about these vaccinations, all babies to be offered chickenpox vaccination. And I will use this one more time just to say, the fact that the MMR take-up for our children, for our babies, is at a 15-year low. If you are fortunate enough to have a baby or a young child, do. I understand your concerns, but you are putting your child at risk by not having the MMR, or MMRV as it will become. And also, if you're about to send your child to school for the first time next month, when school opens again, do you not think it's a little irresponsible to send an unvaccinated child in and possibly risk... Those diseases are... I've had chickenpox. Did I have mumps? I haven't got mum to ask. I'm pretty certain I did. Can't ask it now, can I? I'm going to say I did. I think I did. They are damned painful. Plus, you missed some education. Why would you not want to get that done? So that's at that age range. Let's come slightly up the age scale and talk about this story concerning autism and a report that has been published today. Most autistic people over the age of 40 in this country are living without a diagnosis, and this makes them more susceptible to age-related problems and socially isolated in older age. There's a study that's been published in the Annual Review of Developmental Psychology, and these data and figures have been put together by experts at King's College London. They estimate that among those between 40 to 59 living with autism, 89.29%, let's just say 90% have not been diagnosed. So if you are autistic and you didn't get a diagnosis until your 30s or your 40s or even your 50s, what did that suddenly explain? Now, Steve Slavin is an author of Looking for Normal, Autism and Other Complicated Stuff, an Autistic Boy Who Beat the Odds. Steve, are you talking about yourself in that book title? Good morning.
I am, very much. Good morning.
Thanks for coming on, buddy. How old were you when you were diagnosed?
I was 48 in 2008.
Now everybody's adding up that you're 75. What were the signs? When you look back now on a young Steve Slavin, what behaviour, what issues is now suddenly explained with almost crystal clarity, Steve?
I think social issues, communication, verbal specifically, and processing information, actually. There were things that would be picked up now. Children of my generation in the 60s and the 70s, it was before the autism diagnosis became a thing, which was in the 80s and the 90s, which is why there's a discrepancy of older people not having, you know, they fell through the net, if you like.
You blog on adults with autism, all one word, adultswithautism.org.uk. What's the main source? What are the main sources of conversation or lines of conversation on that blog, Steve?
I talk about ways of dealing mainly with the anxiety that is very common amongst people on the spectrum. It's how you manage the anxiety.
And how did you finally get diagnosed? Was there a major issue that you thought, I've got to go and see a doctor, or I've got to go and see someone who knows what's going on here?
I think what I have in common with a lot of people of my age is that we always knew there was something not quite right with how we interacted with the world, and that's what causes the anxiety. So it was through the mental health services that someone spotted the autism symptoms. I was a psychologist, and it seems to be a very common, common theme, I would say.
And how would you describe it? Is it a condition? Is it a benefit? Does it hold you back? How would you describe your specific autism?
I think with me, it's processing information, which has been, if we do call it disability, with me, that would be the main thing. So actually processing what people are saying to me is one of the main issues I have. So I've had to work really hard to overcome this. And there's a degree of masking. And
well, even now, even as an adult, you still mask it? No.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Why?
Yeah. Well, you have to mask to function in the world. You know, if you want to have a family, if you want to have a job, if you want to do all the normal things that people of our age do.
But you can sit in a coffee shop or a pub or a restaurant with mates and say, oh, by the way, I'm autistic, in a way that you couldn't have done 20 years ago. We have moved on, right? Is that fair to say, Steve?
We have moved on. But I'm not sure how much society has moved on, really. Okay. I tend not to mention it very much these days. When I first had the diagnosis, I told everybody because I thought, finally, I have a legitimate reason for why I've seen the world that I always in the way that I always had. But now I sort of got past that, and now I tend not to mention it very much because you don't want to play into the victimhood, potential victim status of that.
Enjoyed our conversation. Be well, Steve. Thank you. Steve Slavin blogs at adultswithautism, all one word, .org.uk. And he wrote, Looking for Normal, Autism and Other Complicated Stuff for an Autistic Boy Who Beat the Odds. Gina, you're going to tell us about your diagnosis in a moment, but Alex is on the Wirral, and are you a Gen Zer and you can't use a petrol pump? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm all right, sir. Are you a Gen Zer?
Unfortunately, I am. I think I'm 1997, so I'm on the start of that Gen Zer.
Right.
I'm going to tell you a quick story. So I run a few businesses, one's a coffee shop, and recently the girl in the coffee shop, who's worked there for about a year and a half, said, you know, we need another freezer. We're completely full, haven't got any more space. And I thought, I don't know how this is happening. There's two freezers there. There's plenty of room. So I went in. You know, it's been running for a year and a half, and I opened the freezer. The thing wouldn't even close. It was pure ice. You couldn't see where the drawers were.
Oh.
And she'd never heard of defrosting a freezer to the point where before it had fully frozen over, she'd actually pulled the front off the drawers, the plastic off the actual drawer, to access the small space that hadn't iced over until it was unreachable. And I cannot believe that an individual has never heard of defrosting a freezer, and that's someone who is a Gen Z in my generation. And that's just one small example that flabbergasts me, and I'm part of that generation.
Alex, you run a number of businesses, so presumably you employ a few Gen Zers along the way, or Gen Zers, Gen Zers along the way.
I do, yes. Yeah,
what are the benefits? What are the challenges of employing Gen Zers?
I'd say the benefits are they grow with technology. It's just something they've always grown up with.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, even for me, they'll teach me things that I didn't know, or they'll do things a lot quicker than I can. I'd say the downside is they don't have the practical skills that, say, generations prior to me had. And, you know, little things like when you were a kid and I'd go to scouts, or you go to, like, learn bushcraft. It's those practical, strange life skills as a young child that actually are very valuable, the practical skills. And they almost have gained that gratification through online sources these days, and I don't think they have the practical skills that they need later in life.
Did you get that from mum, dad, brothers? How did you get sisters? How did you get the practical skills?
I don't know. I was a bit feral, so, you know, just always being outside, or, you know, something go wrong, I'd reverse the car into a wall when I was 17 and have to somehow try and figure out how to change the tyre, and little things like that. You know, you make a mistake, you figure it out yourself. I think they're quite reliant on technology, where, you know, we didn't have that. We'd have a, you know, a BlackBerry back in the day, but you couldn't search the internet from anywhere in the world and have an answer in 4 seconds. So you have to figure it out yourself, really.
Do you want to... Where is your coffee shop?
It's in Chester.
Do you want to tell me the best coffee shop in Chester?
Oh, gosh, I'd love to, Nick, but in case she's got the radio on now and she's listening, I really don't want to go in there in a minute and get a coffee and see her face.
Look after yourself. Safe driving. Don't back the car into anything. Good luck with the coffee shop and your other businesses. Alex, thanks for sharing stories. So many stories. Be well. Now, discovering you're autistic, not in later life, we're not talking about your 60s, 70s, 80s, but maybe in your 30s or 40s. Gina's in Wokingham. What happened with you, Gina? What age were you?
Good morning, Nick. First time caller, so I'm very nervous. This is completely out of my comfort zone.
Oh, Lord. Well, if it gets too much, just, you know, say, but just go nice at your pace, nice and easy at your pace.
Thank you. Okay. So I was diagnosed in my early 40s, and it was after I had my first child. I was 35, and when he was 18 months old, we realised, you know, there's something here that we need to get looked at. And he was diagnosed with autism.
Mm.
So that's where my journey started. And I just wanted to find out everything I possibly could to help him through life. Mm. So on that journey, I went to support groups, I went to presentations, and I had an opportunity to go to a National Autistic Society conference for women. Now, it wasn't just for women to attend, but it was about women with autism. And every single woman who took to that stage, they were professionals and they were just normal everyday mums like myself.
Right.
I could relate to. And it just fell on me like a sack of potatoes. I was blown away.
Mm.
I realised, this is me. I'm them. I could.
But what was it that was said that you suddenly, the light bulb went on? You, wow, I've got it. I'm identifying.
It was never fitting in to society, always being on the fringes, never feeling comfortable, always masking. The anxiety before meeting people or before doing something.
Do you not think everyone has anxiety before meeting people? No.
Some may, but not to this degree.
Right.
Not to the degree where you have to prepare yourself for days beforehand to leave the house.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then drinking in social situations to give the confidence to be able to function.
Oh, I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah. Mm.
Do you have an official diagnosis now, Gina? You do?
Yes.
Okay.
I was fortunate to have private medical care, so I got that. But I didn't need it, because I knew.
But what does that mean for your daily life? Now that you know that you are autistic, what has that changed in your life, or how you feel about yourself, or how you feel about others?
I feel more confident in myself. I feel happier in my own skin. I don't beat myself up about not being like other people, being what society thinks people need to be.
You say you have a son, is that right?
Yes, I have two children, both with autism.
How old are they?
Well, my eldest is now 20.
Yeah.
And I'm actually sat in the car outside the driving test centre waiting for him to do his theory test.
Oh, oh my goodness. Good luck to the lad.
He has blown us away. He's been fantastic. He started off non-verbal And now he's got 3 A-levels and he knows what he wants to do. He wants to work in a lab. Brilliant. And he's a homeless mom and dad and as happy as anything. My daughter is 18 and she is completely different. She has autism, but right. She would have been like me. She would have fallen through the net.
Right.
And it was only because of her brother being diagnosed that she was then diagnosed.
When does the lad finish his theory test? How long does it take? I have no idea. I didn't do one.
Well, they have an hour and a half, I think.
Oh, my
God. But he
usually
does it in about 50 minutes.
So he's not going to finish before 10 o'clock this morning, as he said, that we can find out whether he passed or not.
Well, he might come out any minute. Who knows?
Okay, listen, if he does, could you call back? Would you mind awfully if he does come back in the next, what have we got? Well, I've got 14 minutes in reality. If he let us know how he gets on, because we're all pulling for the lad. Gina, I hope to hear from you later. If not, best wishes to the boy and, of course, to your daughter. And thank you. Good luck. Will we hear whether the lad passes? There's only one way to find out. Stay tuned. We're all wishing him our best. And we'll talk more about diagnosis of autism slightly later in life in a moment. We're ready at 9:46. LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Free chickenpox vaccines will be rolled out for children in England and Wales from January. The Court of Appeal is due to rule on an injunction blocking the use of a hotel in Essex to house asylum seekers. An MSP has had his Scottish Parliament pass deactivated over claims a secret camera was placed in toilets at Holyrood. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 in Kent is closed westbound from Junction 9 at Ashford to 8 at Leeds Castle. It's all down to an accident and there are severe delays on the approach and on the surrounding routes, including the A20 and the M2. Now, elsewhere, problems in Southall. Merrick Roads had to be closed both ways and that's all down to an accident. Also, very busy in Bethnal Green. Valance Road is closed in both directions because of an ongoing police investigation. Severe delays on the Bakerloo line, that's because of a shortage of trains, and Stansted Express services are still disrupted after that track problem earlier at Liverpool Street, but the Weaver line's back up and running, but with delays.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Ed Davey.
I think Donald Trump is the only person who can stop the killing in Gaza and get the hostages released, so I've refused to attend his state banquet. Have I done the right thing?
Ed Davey on LBC.
As it's free to sell in your local area on eBay, I was thinking, maybe I should sell that bench press. Oh, that's literally been benched. And this guitar that I've forgotten how to play. Oh, must be the buyer for the chest of drawers I listed yesterday. And I'm still in my pyjamas. Be with you in a sec.
With new listing features, it's easy to sell for free in your local area on eBay. Download the app now. eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out. Show support. Report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, love. Just spoke to Zara from St. James's Place.
Your financial advisor?
Yeah, we've made a plan. Retire early, travel more. Peru first.
Ooh, ¿cómo estás?
Bless you. And Zara's plan means I can help more with your house deposit.
Thanks again, Dad.
Planning for the future calls for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Yes, you did hear correctly. So Ed Davey is here taking your calls at 10 o'clock. We don't know whether he's doing it from a surfboard or the water slide at Chessington World of Adventures, but it's definitely one of them. Look forward to welcoming Sir Ed in a few minutes' time. Who's been hanging on the line? That would be John in Manchester. John, I'm going to ask you outright. You have autism. Good morning.
Hello, I'm hoping it's going to be a surfboard, by the way.
He'll probably be listening in the newsroom, furious now. On you go, John, the point you want to make.
I'm aware that I've got autism, as I went to a psychiatrist and yep. spoke to them privately and have done over a period of time when I was younger. But I purposely sought not to seek a formal diagnosis because it would be extremely limiting on my career and right. as such by not getting a diagnosis.
Just give me a broad idea. Are you in clerical work? Are you in a police? Just broadly, what kind of line you're in?
I formerly served in the Marines, with autism, that would have been a bar to entry for the military.
Right.
And I work in the emergency services now.
Okay.
Although it wouldn't be a bar to entry for the emergency services, I probably rightfully or wrongfully believe that there would be limitations on what jobs I could do within the emergency services should I have a formal diagnosis.
What were you like as a lad? Were you a good student? Were you a little bit rebellious? Were you awkward? How would you define yourself as a young lad, John?
In terms of study-wise, probably average. In the sense of I just got my grades that I needed to do and that was it kind of thing. I absolutely hated school, not because of the education aspect of it, but purely because of the social aspect of it. I never really had any friends at school. The only kind of like friend that I did formulate would be through online platforms. So I used to kind of like just keep myself to myself in my room and play online games. And that's kind of how I formulate. I seem to formulate far more deeper connections with people online when I was a child, because I think other people like me were within that space as well.
How much is the fact that you understand you're on autism help to explain the younger John?
In the sense,
do you understand your behaviour a little better now that you know that you're autistic?
I would say so, yeah. I think all that it's kind of like really given me is just more a fundamental acceptance of who I am.
Right.
I think the main thing that I really kind of like struggle with now is that people that are within my life, mainly from maybe a career standpoint, aren't as understanding of me as what I would have thought they would have been, considering the area of business that I work in.
Okay.
However, I have a lovely life apart from that person. I've got a beautiful young daughter who's only two, and she's my best friend in the world. Although I am separated now.
Right, I'm sorry.
That's one element, is it? But however, I got on really well with her mum as well.
Okay. And when you went into the Marines, I would imagine you formed close friendship then?
I have been, yeah.
Yeah.
And those individuals I'm still friends with now. Obviously, due to the nature of our ages now, obviously we've got our own personal lives in terms of like family, etc.
Yeah.
So naturally, you aren't with them every single day as you were. But those formations of friendship are deep.
And do your friends now know, your ex-military friends, do they know you are autistic?
I think I'm the kind of individual that, were you to get to know me over time, it's kind of, I would suggest it's maybe kind of obvious that my social ability is of a way that I regularly get told at work that, in a funny way, in a banterish way, that I'm more like a robot rather than a person, which I'm completely fine with because I find it quite funny, but it's more, I'm more like the C-3PO at work.
Well, listen, John, thank you, and it's not your real name, I know, thank you for your call. Thank you for your service in the military, and thank you for your service in one of the emergency services and for being candid. And I think that's brilliant. You've got a lovely, beautiful two-year-old daughter, and you're friendly with her mum. Yeah, and I wish you nothing but success in everything. Well done, sir. Thank you. Chris in Southampton, how old were you when you got your diagnosis?
Well, I've probably been autistic since I was about 8 years old, Nick, when it first started to surface.
Yes.
As being rebellion and disruptive.
Right.
But it wasn't until I was 69, and I actually worked in the autistic industry as a support worker as well, and things began clear with the students and tenants I work with, and what I had in common with them. And then another lady I met who worked with disadvantaged kids said one night at the football when I was stewarding, "Chris, can I ask you if you're autistic?" And I said, "I think I am, because I tick all the boxes."
So we need to just wind back a little bit. You said you were rebellious. Aren't all 8-year-old boys rebellious, Chris?
Boy, as much as I was, because in those days it was very strict. In the early 60s at primary school, you could probably get the cane for sneezing. You know what I mean? It was pretty brutal. And, of course, I've always stood my ground, and I like to tell the truth. Yes. And I will face up to something that I think is wrong. And that wasn't allowed in those days.
Well, I'm glad now that you sort of put an explanation, a rationale, that's a better word, a rationale to it all. Chris, thank you. Good luck to you. AD is in Maidstone. Your diagnosis in the 50s, is that... Sorry, in your 50s, I'm sorry. AD, good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
How did you finally get the diagnosis?
Well, after many years of finding life extremely difficult, ever since I can remember, I started going through sort of like the mental health way in trying to seek therapy. Didn't know what was wrong. Found relationships really hard. I've had two children, two separate women and my son's mother.
Right.
Had turned around to me after getting diagnosis for my son, and it was quite clear from an early age that she said, "You do realise this is you."
Right.
Which started me off on the trek of looking it up, realising all the, you know, the traits that I have or I have had.
You referred to them as difficulties earlier. What do you mind my asking, you know, what those difficulties were, Heidi?
Yeah, all sorts of things. Relationships, keeping still, verbal diarrhea. But when it came to schooling, I was quite rebellious, but I was a good student. In other words, it didn't look like I was taking the information in, but in those days we did an 11 plus before we went in and did a 13
plus.
And I did extremely well in those exams, and even the teacher on the parents' evening said, "We'd reset it and reset us, all the people, because they thought there might have been a bit of cheating." And I did even better, so I got into all the top streams when I went to secondary school, and they were the days of CSEs, and just literally, I think through the boredom, the curriculum, the authority, I ended up doing CSEs, which is the last thing that someone with ADHD needs to
and
be
you
doing.
Did well because at them.
Not really, no. I did well at the O levels because I could go into an exam and I could have all the answers and I could just do it. But when it came to CSEs, it was coursework. And with ADHD, you never end up finishing any sort of projects.
I see what you're saying. AD, I must leave it there. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend. Because about 14, 15 minutes ago, we were talking to Gina in Wokingham, who was sitting in a car park waiting to find out whether her son had passed his driving theory test. This is only going away one of two ways, really. Gina and Woking, the lads come out. Is it a pass or a fail? Gina, morning again.
Good morning. It's a pass.
Yes! Get in, you beauty! Is the young man there? And if so, would he have 5 seconds with me? If not, I quite understand.
Well, times I failed before, as I just learned that my intuition a bit was unreliable, so I just...
Right.
So I looked at the paper without any expectations, and that was it.
And you've done it?
Yeah.
So now what happens? You now have to get an actual driving test. You've through the theory hurdle, now the next one, right?
Yeah, I've had two driving tests so far as well.
Lessons.
Oh, lessons.
Lessons, true lessons. Fantastic. How are you going to celebrate?
Being happy.
Good man. That's the note on which we'll finish. Will you thank your mother, Gina? Thank you. Well done, sir. I'm delighted we finish on positive news because I'm done for the day and indeed I'm done for the week. Coming up after the news... On a surfboard. Sir Ed Davey here taking your calls. I'm done for the week. I'll be back Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thanks, Nick. You're listening to me, Ed Davey, standing in for James O'Brien. Later on, I want to talk about care and the families looking after loved ones and ask, what don't we get right about carers in Britain? I think Keir Starmer is too soft on President Donald Trump. If Starmer toughened up a little bit, we'd get a better deal for our country. Do you agree? But first, I announced this week that I'm not taking up my invite to the banquet for Donald Trump's state visit. And the reason is, I think we need to put pressure on him to do what only he can do, to stop the killing in Gaza, stop the famine, and get the hostages released. Have I done the right thing? Call me on 0345 6060973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Health Minister Stephen Kinnock has told LBC that anti-vaccine conspiracy theorists must be defeated. A free chickenpox jab will join MMR in the childhood immunisation programme in England and Wales from January. But new figures show vaccine uptake remains well below target levels. Mr Kinnock says the government's working with GPs and schools to tackle the big problem.
There is a lot of disinformation and misinformation out there. People going on social media and talking rubbish about vaccines, that is not helping. We are looking to combat that.
Israel has reportedly declared Gaza City a dangerous combat zone. Officials say a tactical ceasefire of military activity for the distribution of aid will no longer apply to the area. The IDF has been implementing the pauses to allow for supplies to be handed out. Judges are set to rule in the latest stage of a legal battle over an asylum hotel in Epping. The Home Office and the hotel's owner are seeking to challenge an injunction banning its use for housing migrants. A decision will be announced this afternoon. Ministers have told a contractor to stop advertising for certain jobs at an immigration removal centre near Heathrow. One job description for an arts and crafts tutor included responsibilities for teaching floristry, cake decorating and balloon craft. The government says it does not believe the roles are necessary. A suspended Labour MSP has been charged over allegations a secret camera was placed in toilets inside the Scottish Parliament. Colin Smith's security pass was deactivated by Holyrood authorities yesterday. He lost the Labour whip earlier this month after being charged with possession of indecent images. Ministers are facing growing pressure to protect the creative industries from artificial intelligence. They've been accused of legitimising wide-scale copyright theft by failing to stop AI firms scraping content. The Musicians' Union says it's becoming an existential threat. Violinist and Classic FM presenter Nicola Benedetti says tougher regulations are needed.
I think we will adjust. I do believe that artists will fight that case eloquently, but we also have a history of artists being used and abused, and it's just going to be a fight that we have to keep fighting.
The government says it's firmly committed to ensuring rights holders are compensated fairly. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading down 6 points at 92.09. The pound buys $1.34 and the euro 15. LBC weather, sunny spells and blustery showers for most places. Some of that rain will be heavy with the odd rumble of thunder. A high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ed Davey.
Good morning. You're listening to me, Ed Davey, standing in for James O'Brien on LBC until 1 o'clock today. I'm the Member of Parliament for Kingston and Surbiton in South East London, but I'm the leader of the Liberal Democrats, and I want to talk to you about issues close to my heart. First of all, at the end of the show, the last hour, I want to talk about carers. I think family carers do amazing jobs, and I wonder about how we can help them more, and I want to hear about your experiences and your ideas. Then at the middle hour, I want to talk about Trump, Donald Trump. Particularly, I want to see if you think Keir Starmer's approach to Donald Trump is the right one. You know, he's cozying up, he's trying to get a deal, he's trying to be nice to him. Do you think that's the right approach? And I'm going to explain why I'm not so sure. But I want to start the show by talking about Gaza and a decision I made this week not to go to the state banquet for Donald Trump, because I think he's the person who can stop the famine, the devastation, the conflict in Gaza and get the hostages released. And I want to talk about that. I want to hear your views. So do call in and let me know what you think, and particularly if you disagree with me, frankly. But let me start by telling you why I came to the decision, because I've actually been wrestling with it over the summer, because an invite to a banquet at Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle is a great honour, and I've been really privileged to be invited 6 or 7 times in the past, and always enjoyed them. They're good fun, it's a good grub, it's a real honour. And I wanted to go, and indeed I actually suggested that we have this state banquet for and state visit for Donald Trump, because, you know, I think it's a way to influence him. And up until the beginning of the summer, I had every intention of going if I was invited. But do you know what? Over the summer, particularly seeing the images coming from Gaza, the children starving, you could see their skeleton, the lifeless bodies of children killed where they're queuing just to get food and water, and the emaciated hostages, which the appalling terrorists put on the TV. You know, I thought we've got to do something. And the person who actually can do something is Donald Trump. Now, he's the only person, I think, who can both talk to Netanyahu and get him to let the food in, get the food aid in, stop the attacks, and also pick up the phone to the Qatari government and the other Gulf states who have influence on Hamas to get them to release the hostages. So he's the only person who can do this. And he's coming to our country on a state visit next month. And at that state banquet, I wouldn't get to talk to him. You don't at those things, not in my experience. But by making this stand, we can get the debate going. We can hopefully put pressure on the government to do the right thing and put pressure on Donald Trump. You know, the truth is, at the moment, he's just giving Netanyahu his full support. He says he's stopping all these wars. I think he said he stopped 6 wars, didn't he? Don't think he has, actually. He claims he can stop things. He claims he has this power. And actually, US presence in the past have been very influential on everything in the Middle East. And I believe he could do something. And that's why I think when he comes to our country, we should be debating this. We should have it in the media. I'm delighted that actually people, even if they haven't been agreeing with me, have been talking about this decision. And I hope that when he comes and during his visit, before and after his visit, we all agree as a country that actually he's the person who can take action. And actually our government should be saying that loud and clear. I hope that it could make a difference. I don't think, by the way, he's going to take much notice of me individually. I'm humble enough to realise I'm not sure anyone who's leader of a party with Liberal and Democrat in the name is going to appeal to Donald Trump. But if we can get our government to do the right thing, if we can get the media to cover this point, this man has that power. And, you know, as we speak, you know, the tanks are lining up to go into Gaza City. There's 1 million civilians in Gaza City, and they face being forcibly removed, having to go, and a lot of people being killed, and the famine getting even worse. So if you care about that, if you care about the lives of the hostages still there, I think we've got to send the strongest message to Netanyahu, and the person who can do that is Donald Trump. Now, I have to say, it was not an easy decision. You may disagree with it. There are people who've disagreed with it. In fact, there's a person who was in this chair